Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to take a commercial break. Time out here in just a second for a commercial break. And we'll be back with more UWF action. We'll keep the cameras rolling, and you won't miss a thing. And we'll be right back after this very brief timeout. And folks, when we say you won't miss a thing, by God, we mean it. Because they ain't fucking moving. Can we come back now? Well, let's wait a minute.
Let's wait till we quit saying fuck.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Oh, good fucking knee.
Yeah, fuck.
He's going to hit it with his fucking fist. What a fucking shot.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
You like fighting a woman?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
It's not hot. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Well, this was the week that the world was turned upside down. Not just the wrestling world, the entire world, which has been paralyzed by this coronavirus, the biggest heel in the world right now. Corona beer may not be able to survive this pandemic. There was one PR firm, and I know this firm because I interviewed with them many years ago. They're a big firm here out of New York. They did a phone survey, and they found that 38% of beer-drinking Americans would not buy Corona beer under any circumstances going forward, for fear that it would somehow be linked to the coronavirus, thus proving that 38% of beer-drinking Americans are idiots. And that number actually sounds low to me. This is episode 643 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, March 15th, 2020. I am the Solid Monster. I do have a lot of coronavirus-related updates to get into because it's simply unavoidable. And people have been overwhelmed with news all week. News is changing by the hour. And so I'm going to do my best to try to bring all of you the latest wrestling updates as I know them. This is as of Sunday morning, because there's a lot of confusion out there right now. So I'm going to get through that, and then I'm going to get into the usual business of the week and try to restore a little bit of normalcy here as much as possible. This is the perfect week, for example, for RSPW Rewind to return. And my hope is, and this goes for every show, every live stream that I do going forward, because I have no plans of stopping. You know, even if WWE and AEW ultimately were to do so, had to halt everything, I'm still going to be here, sounding off on something, so that you people have something to at least take your mind off things, even if just for a couple of hours each week. But my hope is that you will support not only this show, and my work, but all podcasters and YouTubers with whatever downtime that you may have. You know, a lot of people are going to be working from home. Some people may not be working at all right now. Hopefully that's only temporary. And, you know, because there are going to be people who lose their jobs over what's going on. Hopefully that doesn't happen to any of you. Some people just don't want to leave their house, or they are unable to leave their house. I hope you use that time at home to help support all of the different shows, because it could be a good way to escape from everything that's going on. Even though, again, there is going to be a lot of talk about this virus, even on these shows, because you can't ignore it. But hopefully, if you hear a familiar voice, it'll help put your mind at ease just a little bit. And if things get worse, and there is no wrestling for a while, even in empty buildings, then I may have nothing left to talk about but to review classic content. That's always an option. All options are open. But I plan to be here as long as I'm able to be, even though here in New York, I mean all over the place, I guess, but especially here in New York, it's getting a little scary. One way to kill time, if you are at home and you're bored, is to read books. Or better yet, let somebody else read them to you. You can sign up for an Audible trial. This sounds like a great time, actually, to take Audible up on their offer. Free for 30 days. You can sign up for an Audible trial. Use our link at one free book of your choice when you visit audibletrial.com/solomonster. You can download titles, listen to them offline, anywhere. Their app is free to download, and you can listen across devices without losing your spot. They have thousands of titles to choose from, so sign up now, free for 30 days at audibletrial.com/Solomonster and get your one free audio book. If you want to become a PayPal VIP, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the show. Thank you to all of our VIPs this week. I very much, especially with all the insanity going on, you never know what's going to be from one week to the next, but we had a lot of support this week from the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera. I had one person email me a while back. He goes, you know, sometimes I'll be listening to your podcast in my sleep. I'll start it, and when you get to the nicknames, it's almost like counting sheep. When I listen to you, because he almost knows all of the names by heart, because it's a lot of the same names every week, and it helps him fall asleep sometimes. He goes, no offense, but it helps me fall asleep sometimes. Hey, whatever floats your boat. I wouldn't call Loose Cannon a sheep. He might be offended by that, but I am not offended by that. John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Killshot, Keith Hart, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Stephen Handyman, Halistic, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Big Papa Slop, Dan Leopold, John Raging Mad Riffle, and we've got Ali X Kokar with the donation. Jared Dark Knight Mysterio, who said they shut down his old high school with everything that's been going on. That also happens to be MJF's old high school. We've got DeVenom, John Iru, Eric Firstblood Fisher, and the Wichita lineman, Clayton Nettleson. All three of those last names I mentioned are first-time donators, so my thanks to them. Carlos, Prince of Poetry Ramirez, who no longer supports WWE in any capacity. And the sound off is the only way that he gets his wrestling news now. Carlos is one of many to voice that opinion to me. And Orlando Dow, thank you for the kind words on iTunes. He has been a listener since 2010. One of our longtime diehards, so thank you for the support. This coronavirus, COVID-19 is what they're called. I guess there's a whole, actually, series or families of coronaviruses. It's not really the coronavirus. This particular one is called COVID-19. It's wreaking havoc all over the world. This is not a pro wrestling story. This is potentially a global catastrophe, is what this is. And not just on the medical side of things, but if it grinds the economy to a halt, that's going to be devastating for a lot of people, and we're already seeing signs of it. It's going to be potentially devastating for a lot of people. I've never seen anything like this before in my lifetime, not since 9/11 have I seen and just felt this sense of and you hear it not just on TV, but just everywhere, the sense of panic and dread. And, you know, is it overplayed in some circles? Sure. You know, you're always going to have people who overplay it, but a lot of it also, frankly, is probably justified given everything that's going on. And to put things in perspective, this virus is going to kill far more people than were killed on 9/11, globally anyway, although it seems inevitable that it's going to happen here as well. You know, China was hit hard. Italy is being devastated right now. And if I have any Italian listeners out there, I heard from one the other day, but if you're able, I'd love to hear from you guys as far as your perspective about what you're seeing and hearing on the ground there. Italy right now is under a nationwide quarantine. That whole country is on lockdown. And I see France and Spain now have you know, joined in on that front as well. In Italy, they don't even have enough beds to treat the infected. Doctors have to make decisions, you know, on who lives and who dies. It's awful. And Italy, you know, has a large elderly population there, so they've been really hit the hardest by the virus so far. Here in this country, whatever the official number is of the infected, you have to ignore it, because it's a hell of a lot higher than whatever the current number being reported is. Right? If you can't test people, it's hard to know how many people are sick and don't even know it. So it's also that fear of the unknown that I think is really unnerving to a lot of people. Now, I've seen a lot of people downplaying this comparing it to the flu. You know, they say, oh, the flu kills far more people. I don't understand what the hysteria is about. You know, the government has its own task force that it has set up for this coronavirus. And one of the voices on that task force is one of the few that I trust. He's one of the more respected names in the country. You know, Dr. Fauci, you've probably heard of him or seen him on TV giving updates. He himself says that COVID-19 is 10 times deadlier than the flu. You know, 3 months ago, he was tweeting that this was going to be a global pandemic and people laughed at him. Well, no one's laughing now. No one is laughing now. You've got large companies, you've got sports leagues that make millions and billions of dollars off of business as usual that are shutting down, shutting everything down. The NBA, they weren't mandated to shut down. They made a choice. You know, airlines are not cutting flights because they felt like it. Restaurants, in a lot of cases, are not shutting down because they want to go out of business. Schools aren't closing because it's all just one big giant hoax. I even saw, you know, Kevin Castle, and shout out to Kevin Castle from DTKC, talking about how hard his own business, the club business, is being impacted by what's going on. You know, I don't know what it's going to take to convince some of these people to take this stuff seriously. I'm not saying you got to freak out, the end is nigh, you know, but pay attention to what's going on and use common sense. Better safe than sorry. You know, everything we do before a pandemic like this is going to feel like an overreaction. Everything we do after a pandemic is going to feel like it's not enough. That's the best way that I heard somebody put it. It's so true. You know, my real fear, I'll tell you my real fear, in watching all of the panic and just everything that's going on, and I'm watching a lot of what's unfolding and reading stories from doctors and hospital workers on the ground going through this right now in Europe, and you got to figure they're probably a good 10 days to 2 weeks ahead of where we are right now. So one of my fears is that we're about 10 days to 2 weeks behind and that some of this may be coming our way. But I'm reading some of these stories. It's the effect that this is going to have on our hospitals and our healthcare system. You know, the shortages that we might see here in medical personnel. These are the people on the front lines that we rely on these people to stop this from getting worse. But what happens when doctors and nurses get sick? What do? Well, they self-quarantine just like the rest of us, which means fewer doctors and fewer nurses. And that's what makes this so scary. I can't even imagine the anxiety that I would have if my mother was still around right now. You guys know all the health issues that she had. I mean, I'd be more worried about her than myself or anybody else. I'd be freaking out right now. If she had to be around to go through something like this, as compromised as her immune system and her situation was, I can't even imagine. You know, we don't have enough people. We don't have enough beds, and we may end up not having enough equipment to support what's coming. You know, there's one town in Washington State where more than a quarter of the local fire department is under quarantine right now. Now, what if this starts to take a toll on fire departments and police departments and EMS workers? You know, they're not robots. They're human beings. They get sick too, just like you and I. I want all of you to be safe. What do I say in my sign-off at the end of every podcast that I've been doing, you know, for most of the last 13 years, right? Be well and stay safe. I say it every single week. And I mean that. That's why I say it. I don't want you coming back to life and trying to bite me in the zombie apocalypse, okay? I watch the show. I know how this works. I know how this starts. So I preface all of the wrestling talk with that, to say that in the grand scheme of things, wrestling really doesn't seem so important. You know, this is primarily a wrestling podcast, obviously, so that's the focus, but there are more important things going on in the world, which is why the prospect of WWE having to cancel or postpone WrestleMania, which as of this morning still has not happened. I know that upsets some people who think that WWE should stand their ground. It's all media hype. You know, don't cave in. Or there are other people who seem to be more concerned about losing money on their hotel reservation if they can't go. Those people need to wake up. They need to wake up. That is not a valid argument for why WrestleMania should go on as planned on April 5th. Forget the fans for a second. What about the performers? I don't hear anybody talking about the wrestlers. And the production staff and the people who are still traveling and working and putting these shows together. I mean, use your fucking head. It sucks. This entire situation sucks. I don't want to see WrestleMania canceled. Nor is it good for my own show. Or my YouTube channel if there's no WrestleMania show for me to stream a review for. So believe me, I don't like this any more than some of you do. But WrestleMania cannot move forward on April 5th. WrestleMania will not move forward on April 5th. They will have no choice but to postpone the event to a later date, or, I suppose if they really wanted to, they could spread some of the matches out over a period of weeks on Raw and SmackDown. I don't think that's ideal, but they could do that if they wanted to. You know, the city of Tampa and the mayor's office, they convened a meeting on Thursday, where the belief was that they might make a decision after that meeting on Thursday with respect to WrestleMania. Instead, they put the ball squarely in WWE's court to make the final decision. You know, Les Miller, he's the county commissioner down there in Tampa, said that he's hoping Vince McMahon and WWE will make the call themselves. But a week from now, if they still have not done so, and they're basically still playing a game of chicken with each other, in his words, they're probably going to have to pull the plug on WrestleMania. The writing is on the wall. You had the county sheriff. The county sheriff commended every sports franchise for erring on the side of caution, and he said he hopes WWE follows suit. He said, I don't ever want to see people put profit over public safety. Talk about a black eye on Vince McMahon and WWE when you've got the local sheriff who has to go public and say, boy, I don't want to see people putting profit over public safety. It's not a good look for WWE to be the last holdout. Sounds like they're trying to guilt WWE into pulling the plug on the event themselves. Now, there may be reasons why WWE is stalling that we're not aware of. It's very possible that if WWE makes the call on their own, they're on the hook for monies that they can't recoup. If they've made certain commitments contractually, if they're the ones that kind of push that button and make the final decision, they could be on the hook and, you know, lose out on money or certain things. Whereas if the county or the city or who knows, even the federal government, if they were ultimately to pull the plug, maybe they lose a lot less. Maybe it's all a matter of covering their ass and protecting themselves. Case in point, look at WrestleCon. Every year, WrestleMania weekend, you've got WrestleCon, right? It used to be Wrestle Reunion many years ago. When I first started going to WrestleMania in that year in Miami, that was the final Wrestle Reunion convention. That was Wrestle Reunion 7. And I don't know if it was the very next year, but in the years that followed, WrestleCon basically took the place of what had been Wrestle Reunion. And, you know, it's become a very successful convention. I've been to a number of the WrestleCon events. You remember that one year in Orlando? I got to work for Fight TV, and I did a whole bunch of interviews at WrestleCon, and it was great. Michael Bacchicchio, he not only runs WrestleCon every year, he also runs HighSpots.com as well. And he recorded a video this week explaining where things stand, because he still has not pulled the plug on WrestleCon. And he had to record a video and explain to the viewers and the customers where things stood. He's in a similar boat as WWE is, obviously on a much smaller scale, but he's in a similar boat in that he has contracts with venues and hotels, and if they have to cancel, he himself, his family, he and his wife are personally on the hook to pay the full amount, which is in the thousands, maybe tens of thousands of dollars. And that doesn't even include all of the refunding of people's money, which he says, at the end of all this, if there is a cancellation, everybody's money will be refunded. It may take some time. He's got to literally sit there and do it himself, one by one. But he will refund everyone's money if he has to. But it would be devastating to him and his family. The hotels are the worst part because of the way that he had to book all of the rooms in advance. And, he, you know, if he has to pay for all of those rooms, he said flat out, it's going to bankrupt WrestleCon. That's going to be the end of WrestleCon. And it may bankrupt High Spots as well. And he and his wife would have to sell their house. So what they're hoping for is that the city of Tampa issues an order that prohibits gatherings of a certain size. That would allow them legally to get out of those deals without being financially liable. That's why they haven't canceled, and that's why they haven't issued any refunds yet. He said, look, if it were me, and I was flying in for WrestleCon, I wouldn't want to, and I had kids with me, my family, he goes, I wouldn't fly in, I wouldn't feel safe flying in right now, so he gets it. But he's waiting to see what WWE does, and he's waiting to see what the city does. If there's no WrestleMania, he made it very clear, he took a poll on Twitter of his customers and his followers. He says, if there's no WrestleMania, then there's no WrestleCon. People are not flying into Tampa just for WrestleCon. The two go hand in hand. The longer Vince McMahon drags this out, the worse it's not only, you know, going to be for people like Bukkikyo. And look, he made the choice to piggyback off WrestleMania each year. Vince McMahon is not responsible for whether or not WrestleCon lives or dies. But the longer Vince McMahon drags this out, it's unfair to all the fans who paid for their tickets, their airfare, their hotel, who are waiting to see whether or not there's even going to be a WrestleMania at all. Although at this point, you would have to be absolutely out of your mind to fly to Tampa for any of those shows. Hall of Fame, NXT TakeOver, Raw, SmackDown, and especially WrestleMania, which is the biggest gathering of them all. 60, 70, 80,000 people in one place at one time. That seems like a bad idea. Not only a bad idea for the people going to the show, it sounds like a bad idea for the people in Tampa. These people are being selfish. They could be spreading shit and not even realize it. If I lived in Tampa, I wouldn't want these people flying in for WrestleMania. I'd think that's a bunch of bullshit. Stay the hell out of my state. That's what I would say. That's why the idea of WWE relocating to another state or another country, if I'm that other state or I'm that other country, I don't want WWE. I don't want 80,000 people descending on my state or my country right now, given everything that's going on. But you're not going to find very many places where you'd even be allowed to do that now anyway because of all the restrictions. The writing is on the wall. You've got travel bans. So if you're coming in from Europe, and, you know, the U.S. just added the U.K. and Ireland to that list. For a period of 30 days, you will not be able to fly to the United States. So all of those international fans who fly in for WrestleMania every year, and we hear the soccer chants and everything else, and they do, I know not everybody is a fan of all the chants and everything, but they tend to make WrestleMania and the night after WrestleMania kind of fun. They're not going to be able to come in. You know, if you've got tickets, you know, you're out of luck. But why would they even want to fly here and sit in a stadium with thousands of people, to me, is just beyond insane. It's irresponsible. And so they've got no choice but to cancel or postpone, because if he doesn't, it's pretty obvious Tampa's going to do it for him. You've got the NBA season suspended, NHL season suspended, Major League Baseball, spring training games suspended. Opening day on March 26th has been delayed by 2 weeks. I'd bet anything that it's going to be delayed a lot more than 2 weeks. 2 weeks was to buy themselves some time to figure out what their next move is going to be. South by Southwest, right? The big event down there in Austin, Texas every year, canceled for the first time. E3, I know we have a lot of gamers who listen. E3 in June, canceled. Coachella, postponed until October. Pearl Jam postponing their North American dates. The New Japan Cup. All remaining dates that were scheduled in the New Japan Cup that weren't canceled, canceled. The New Japan Cup is dead. The XFL. XFL was kind of humming along, although this past week their ratings really weren't very good at all. But the XFL has suspended the remainder of its season. And after that announcement was made, we come to find out that the first XFL player has tested positive for coronavirus, a player on the Seattle Dragons. What makes Vince McMahon think that he is any different than any of those other leagues? I mean, the XFL, I guess, is his league. He's got two leagues now. But all he's doing is delaying the inevitable. And it's a terrible position to be in, because what do you do? Do you postpone for another date in May? or June and hope that things are, you know, back to normal by May or June. I don't think they're going to be back to normal by May or June. I'm not even convinced things are going to be back to normal in time for SummerSlam. This could go on for several months. People who think in a month or two this is going to be over, you people are about to be sorely disappointed. So do you extend the stories and the build to some of these matches? Do you extend that out indefinitely? You know, we have a Universal Champion now in Bill Goldberg, who they only put the title on to get it clearly onto Roman Reigns. Now we're faced with the prospect of Goldberg as champion for months to come. Look at Drew McIntyre. Poor Drew McIntyre. I do feel bad for him. You know, this was going to be his big moment if we assume that he was going to beat Brock Lesnar, and that's not a guarantee, but I'm pretty safe in assuming that they probably would have, and probably still will, at some point, change the title. And, you know, he would have gotten his big moment beating Brock Lesnar and becoming champion for the first time in front of 75,000 people. And now he gets deprived of that moment. Potentially. I feel bad for him. You know, do you keep the title on Brock Lesnar for another 6 months and hope that, you know, things blow over by then so that you could change the title in front of actual living, breathing human beings? Do you just move WrestleMania to the Performance Center like they're doing with all their other shows? I think that would be a terrible idea. I think WrestleMania at the PC is a horrendous idea. But if their hands are tied and everything else is shut down, you know what? They may not have much of a say in the matter. Maybe Lesnar and McIntyre can stay home and play each other on WWE 2K20, assuming it doesn't glitch out on them. And they could put the title on the line, and whoever wins is the champion. If Drew wins, then Brock can mail the belt to him. That way nobody gets sick. I mean, here's the problem, though, with pro wrestling. The problem is that pro wrestling, I think more than any other sport or form of entertainment, is reliant upon the crowd. The crowd is part of the show. And I don't just mean the people who try to be part of the show by chanting stupid things or making stupid funny faces on camera. The crowd is part of the show. Pro wrestling is reliant upon crowd reactions to guide who's over and who's not, what's working and what's not. Those special moments, those big returns where you want to hear the big pop and see people losing their mind, all of that is gone when you work in front of an empty building. So yeah, for the first week, and maybe even week two and week three, it's something different, it's something novel, but after that, the novelty wears off. If things get worse and the government institutes some sort of nationwide quarantine, or states individually begin implementing statewide quarantines, that's even worse, because then there are no shows. And we end up with a wrestling off-season with no end in sight. I saw some people cracking jokes about that. We may finally get that elusive wrestling off-season, but that would be devastating to the pro wrestling industry if that happened. You know, a lot of industries are going to be devastated by this, but pro wrestling may be more than most. And I'll say this, if they insist on doing these empty building shows at the PC, the minute that one of their talents gets sick and tests positive for this virus, game over. All shows are going to be suspended just like every other sports league. I'm surprised they're even going on with these shows. How safe is that? You know, think about it. How safe is it really? Given that all the men and women on the roster, they're rolling around with each other. You've got sweat and spit flying and blood. You're asking them to fly to Orlando every single week. I mean, some of them live down there already. They're already local. But not all of them. I don't know how wise it is for them to even be doing these shows. And that goes for AEW also. This is not just a WWE problem. AEW is moving ahead with empty building shows as well. I don't know how bright that is. But consider this. You know, John Cena is in one of the feature matches of WrestleMania this year. We saw him in the empty building on Friday night, him and Bray Wyatt. And they're still promoting their match. And John Cena, he was going to work WrestleMania this year, likely still will. But I would guess after that, he was going to go film his next movie, whatever his next film is. Now, I'm sure a lot of films are probably going to be delaying shooting with everything that's been going on. I know Fast and Furious 9, which is Cena's next big film release, that was due to come out in May, and now it's been pushed back to April of next year. because there's a lot of uncertainty about when this pandemic really is going to die down. They don't want to take any chances. You know, the global, who in their right mind would even want to go to a movie theater right now? You know, a lot of the movie theaters here in New York now, they're still open, but they've slashed capacity and they've instituted the social distancing rules so people can't sit within a certain number of seats of each other. Who would go to a movie theater right now? Geez, I mean, just stay home. You got Amazon Prime, you got Netflix, you got Hulu, you got rentals, whatever. I mean, I don't know, you'd have to be a very brave person, I think, to go to a movie theater. I mean, I don't even like going to movie theaters to begin with. This is just a perfect excuse not to go to a movie theater. But you aren't going to have very many people going to see movies. This is all over the world. So, yes, I understand these studios wanting to push back these big releases that are going to get absolutely nailed if they were to move ahead and come out now. I wonder at some point if a lot of studios make that call, you're not going to have any new movies coming out. It's not going to matter. They're going to have to shut down the theaters anyway if there's no new movies coming out. So they've pushed that back almost a year. But think about this. If they postpone WrestleMania by 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, and then John Cena is not available to wrestle Bray Wyatt. You know, Cena's a loyal guy. I'm sure he's going to do everything in his power to make sure he, you know, sticks to his commitment and works that match. But what if he can't? You know, what if he's not available? What if some studio head says no? There's no easy answer here. But the solution, I think, would be to take their chances and hope that things start to get back to normal by the beginning of the summer. Now, it may not. But cross your fingers, hope it does, and plan for either a June or a July WrestleMania in Tampa, which is not ideal. You know, doing a WrestleMania outdoors in the middle of the summer. But shoot for that. Shoot for a June or July WrestleMania. I imagine they've probably already spent a lot of money on a nice pirate ship theme set for the show. you don't want that to go to waste, I'm sure. Hold off and do the show this summer if you can. If you can't for whatever reason, worst case scenario, you merge Mania and SummerSlam together in August as one giant super show in Boston. Summer Mania. Wrestle Slam. Call it whatever you want. They've already got dates that week, you know, in Boston for NXT TakeOver, Raw, Smack. It's almost like a WrestleMania type of week. You know, book for Boston. You pay off all the big WrestleMania matches there. Maybe some of the mid-card matches for WrestleMania, you can spread them out in the weeks to come on Raw and SmackDown at the PC. But you can't do those bigger matches in front of an empty crowd. You can't do Roman Reigns against Bill Goldberg with no audience. You just can't do it. Edge and Randy Orton, Undertaker and AJ Styles. How are you going to do those matches in front of no crowd? At some point, things are going to get back to normal. I think you take your chances and you wait it out. I don't think you blow these matches off at the PC. And no, Saudi Arabia is not an option. I've seen people joking about that. They've closed their borders. They've stopped all sports activities. So even if they wanted to, no, they cannot bring WrestleMania to Saudi Arabia this year. Now, a lot of other shows have been impacted by the virus as well, not just WrestleMania, potentially. The WWE live event at Madison Square Garden next Sunday is canceled. MSG has been closed. They were promoting an NXT women's title defense on that show, Rhea Ripley defending against Bianca Belair. They were promoting another DX reunion. Gotta sell those tickets. Let's trot out some more of the legends again. They were going to promote a big DX reunion for the show, so that's off. Production on all FS1 studio shows has been suspended, at least through this week and maybe longer. That includes WWE Backstage. CM Punk was due to return to the show this week. His last appearance was way back on February 11th, when the world was a lot simpler than it is today. So it looks like that's going to remain his last appearance for the time being. Raw tomorrow night in Pittsburgh has been canceled. That show will instead emanate live from the WWE Performance Center, which looks to be the company's home base going forward until this all blows over. And boy, did that PC turn out to be a good investment for WWE. Although they don't actually own the Performance Center. They have a lease on the property. As a matter of fact, I think their lease is up in November. I think their lease is up this year. So Monday, tomorrow, is 316 day. So Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to be on the show. There'll be no Stone Cold Pop. this week when the glass shatters. That's going to be very strange. And Undertaker is scheduled to be there. And again, this could all change in light of everything. But they were still promoting an Undertaker appearance along with AJ Styles for a contract signing for their match at WrestleMania. Full Sail University has shut down all classes and group events going forward. That includes the NXT tapings on Wednesday nights, which means that NXT is going to be back again at the PC this week after Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa basically destroyed half the place during their brawl, their epic brawl that I loved on last week's show. SmackDown, this coming Friday, is going to be back again at the PC as well. AEW is impacted by this as well. This week's Dynamite show was scheduled for Rochester, New York, Brody Lee's hometown, who had been expected to make his debut for the company at that show, possibly as the Exalted One of the Dark Order. We're still getting the big reveal this week for the Exalted One, but instead the show will be taking place at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, Florida, even though the mayor of Jacksonville later announced that he was suspending all large gatherings within the city through the end of the month. The AEW show, I guess, is not going to have any fans. Only essential personnel, or if they do have fans, it'll be limited to staff and family members, and that's it. So I guess they can move ahead with the show. The Rochester date has been rescheduled for July 8th. So if you were planning on going, if you have a ticket, I imagine it would just be honored on that date. You might want to call Ticketmaster to find out, but that is the new date for the Rochester show. The Big Blood and Guts show, March 25th in Newark, New Jersey, which sold over 10,000 tickets, I think, on the first day that they went on sale, has been rescheduled for July 22nd. And we don't know yet if that means that the Blood and Guts match between the Inner Circle and the Elite is delayed until July or not. It looks like they're still moving forward with doing it in 10 days, just maybe doing it from Daly's Place in front of no fans. Since on TV this coming Wednesday, they're still moving ahead with the match. There's a, it's either a six-man or an eight-man tag, I think six-man tag, to determine the man advantage in the War Games match, which they're calling Blood and Guts. Can't call it War Games, but that's what it is. They're having a match on TV this week to determine the man advantage. I'm not even sure they'd have enough room to set up two rings in Daly's Place. Daly's Place, it's a unique location. They've done a few shows from there. It's kind of like an outdoor venue, but it's very small. So I guess it would have to, if you don't have any fans, I guess you technically could open it up and put two rings side by side. I guess they could if they wanted to. On the other hand, Matt Hardy, who is a free agent, unless he has already secretly signed and we just don't know yet, but he is free from the clutches of WWE. He tweeted that lots of promoters have reached out to him and his wife, Rebby, about running shows from the Hardy compound and the Dome of Deletion. I think an AEW show from the Hardy compound would be pretty cool. You know, Impact taped a show there once. Tony Khan, by the way, was on the AEW Unrestricted podcast, and he revealed his original name for AEW. It was not always going to be called All Elite Wrestling. The name that he almost went with, and I think he came up with this himself, and then he thought better of it, the name he almost went with was World's Best Wrestling, WBW. Thank God he didn't. That is an awful name. That sounds like a name that somebody would have come up with for their eFed. The Dynamite show scheduled for April Fool's Day in Milwaukee will be relocated elsewhere. The date in Milwaukee has been postponed to October 28th, and the Dynamite show April 8th. In St. Louis will also be relocated elsewhere. The date in St. Louis will be made up on October 7th. Ring of Honor, they canceled their 18th anniversary pay-per-view on Friday and their past versus present show last night. No word on their Supercard of Honor show April 4th in Lakeland, Florida. My guess is that that's going to be canceled as well. And they had a lot of New Japan talent coming in for that show who now may not be able to anyway, so I don't see how they go on with that show. Impact Wrestling, you know, their lockdown show is coming up on March 28th. They were partnering with Border City Wrestling, and they were going to be holding the event, I guess, at St. Clair College, and now comes the news that they have lost the venue. They now have no venue for lockdown. They have to search for a new one because St. Clair College has canceled all on-campus events, and that includes lockdown through the beginning of April. So they are currently mulling over their options to see where and if they could still hold that lockdown show on the 28th. So that looks to be in jeopardy right now. There has been no announcement made about the Crockett Cup pay-per-view April 19th or NWA Power tapings in Atlanta on the 20th and the 21st, so I have no idea what the NWA plans are. CMLL in Mexico announced that all of their shows going forward are on hold indefinitely. As I mentioned before, all remaining New Japan Cup dates are canceled through March 21st. They are going to be making an announcement soon about all of their dates from March 22nd onward, once they've had a chance to monitor the situation and see where things stand right now over in Japan. And for the UFC fans out there, I know we have more than a few who listen to this show. Dana White, he was on SportsCenter last night. UFC London is moving to a venue somewhere else. The March 28th and April 11th shows will no longer be held in Las Vegas, and the Khabib versus Ferguson fight will not take place in Brooklyn or in Las Vegas, but it will happen. They are determined to make this fight happen. Doing his best Vince McMahon impression is Dana White. Dana has vowed that the fights will go on unless the country goes into a total shutdown. Short of a complete and total quarantine or lockdown of the country, these shows are going to go on, so says Dana White. And I believe that's it for now. That's a lot of updates, and this is changing by the hour, so it's very possible that you will have additional information by the time some of you listen to this. But that's a lot of cancellations, that's a lot of postponements, and it just goes to show the widespread effect. And that's only the bigger promotions. Those are only the promotions that are more well-known, that have television or you know, even a presence on YouTube in the case of the NWA. That doesn't even include what's going on with independent wrestling, which is going to get hit and just clobbered the longer this goes on for, even worse than a WWE or an AEW. They at least have the money and the resources to withstand some kind of a long shutdown like this. A lot of independent promotions, a lot of international promotions, you know, even in Japan and other countries, they don't have the means to survive a prolonged shutdown or quarantine of any kind. And so I feel badly for a lot of those independent wrestlers who, you know, they rely on those paychecks, and now those paychecks aren't coming in. They don't have guaranteed contracts. They don't have some kind of base salary or some kind of guarantee, you know, of any kind. So they're going to get impacted by this badly. And if you know there's one thing wrestling promoters can't get enough of, it's money. So if they're canceling or postponing shows, then you know it must be serious. The one other thing I wanted to mention just before I move on from all this virus stuff, I was thinking about this. All the sports leagues that have suspended play for the time being, you wonder what the hell happens with a network like an ESPN. I mean, they got three of them, I think. ESPN, ESPN2. Yeah, I think there's an ESPN3. I know there's an ESPN Deportes. And you could say the same thing, I guess, about Fox Sports as well. But I'm thinking, like, what the hell does ESPN do in the meantime? I guess you could always talk about sports. I mean, there's always going to be something to talk about. But with all of the live sports suspended for the foreseeable future, and you know that there's a lot of people who are only sticking with cable TV in this country, strictly for the live sports. It's going to be very interesting to see if this results, the longer this goes on for, if this results in a huge increase in the number of people who finally are just have had enough and they cut the cord from cable. If these people are sitting at home and they're bored, you know, they're self-isolated in their home, they have nothing to do. They have no sports to watch. They have no reason to watch ESPN. So they subscribe to a YouTube TV trial to check out that service, or a Hulu, or, you know, some other streaming platform. Look, if I'm a service like a YouTube TV or a Sling, I'd be offering an extended trial of my service to lure people in to try it out. I know YouTube TV right now is offering 2 weeks free. That deal ends today, Sunday, March 15th. So if you're listening to this in time and you want to take advantage of it, get on it. I tried YouTube TV out for a couple of weeks a few months ago. I liked it. I wasn't convinced that, you know, I was ready to cut the cord, even though I'm paying far more than I should be for my cable. I probably will end up cutting the cord at some point. But that, I think, could be a lingering effect of this. The longer this goes on, it could spur more people on to say, you know what? I don't need cable anymore. I don't need to be paying $200-$400 a month for cable. The hell with this. And you could end up seeing a surge in users for YouTube TV and other platforms like that. Raw this past Monday was from the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C. We had over 2,700 votes in our Twitter poll, 34% thumbs up, 66% thumbs down. Ironically, that was identical to the final results of my Elimination Chamber poll. That poll had a lot more votes than 2,700. We had 5,100, over 5,000 votes in the Elimination Chamber poll. Same totals, 34% thumbs up, 66% thumbs down. Ricochet went from beating the Messiah and Bobby Lashley and challenging Brock Lesnar for the WWE title to losing to Riddick Moss in a 24-7 title match. And now, wrestling Eric Young on main event. He did an interview with the local ABC affiliate earlier that day to promote Raw. And when he was asked about the possibility of going back to NXT, Ricochet said, oh, sure, oh, yeah, for sure. Anytime they need a hand, I would be there. Sure, no problem. What he really meant to say was, please, God, yes, Hunter, take me back. Rescue me. Paul, please, rescue me. Would he be willing to go back to NXT? He'd be willing to go back and sweep the floors at Full Sail at this point, if that could get him away from Vince McMahon. Drew McIntyre, he beat Eric Rowan. And during the match, he smashed Rowan's cage with his animatronic spider inside with the ring steps. This was not quite as scarring as Earthquake squashing Damien was for me as a young boy. Although there could have been a young boy in the audience now who was about 5, 6, 7 years old who was scarred by what he saw Monday night. See, the difference is somebody can make a meme. Like when you're a young WWE fan and you're of that age, right? An angle like that could scar you for life, which I guess is kind of the point. They want to shock you. They want this to just, they want it to haunt you. Then when you get older and you get to a certain age, a lot of these same angles on WWE television, they scar you, but for very different reasons. Kind of the circle of life as a wrestling fan. That's usually how it works. So Spidey lasted all of 1 week. May he rest in pieces. Riddick Moss, or as I called him last week, who beat Cedric Alexander to keep the 24-7 title. Look, Riddick Moss is getting a push. Good for him. We'll see where it goes. They have suspended the 24-7 rule during his matches now. Why even keep the title around if you're going to suspend the 24-7 rule for it? That was the whole point. Why? So that people could start to take the title seriously? I had one person on my timeline who said, well, it's good to see them finally taking the 24-7 championship seriously. That defeats the whole point of the title. It's a joke belt. It's not meant to be taken seriously. We don't need more titles. It's a gimmick. Once you take the gimmick away, you don't have a need anymore for the ugly green belt. If you're going to suspend the 24-7 rule, get rid of it. AJ Styles and the OC were out for a promo. Undertaker, he said, has twice stolen moments from him. He remembers seeing Undertaker losing to Roman Reigns in Orlando at WrestleMania 33 and leaving his gloves and his coat and his hat in the ring and then vanishing as if he was done, as if he was finished. He said he probably should have been done when Brock Lesnar ended the streak, but whatever. He said in Orlando it was a beautiful moment, but then Undertaker had to come back and ruin that beautiful moment. He says if this were 10 or 15 years ago, he might be worried about calling out The Undertaker, but now he's just a broken-down old man named Mark Calloway. He said Undertaker should have retired 10 years ago. He wasn't sure why he kept coming back, but he's got an idea. He says it was Undertaker's wife, Michelle McCool. He revealed that the two of them are married, for the 7 people who didn't realize that, Undertaker and Michelle McCool are husband and wife. Said that she's playing him like a fiddle. Says Michelle is the most conniving person he's ever met. See, I think AJ is just bitter. Just bitter that Michelle stole his move all of those years ago. She took the Styles Clash. She called it the Faith Breaker. You know, she's a woman of faith. Hence the Faith Breaker. But AJ never forgot that. He said that he would make sure The Undertaker, in his words, dies in the ring at WrestleMania. I wonder if he just sort of ad-libbed that and then quickly realized, oh shit, I shouldn't have said that. He said he's going to take The Undertaker's soul and do exactly what his wife wants him to do. Undertaker has lost his pride, he has lost his dignity, he has lost his mystique, and he's going to literally put the nail in The Undertaker's coffin at WrestleMania. AJ Styles turned into a podcaster, he turned into a YouTuber. Here on Monday Night Raw, making a lot of the same points that people like me have made about The Undertaker and his the loss of the mystique and how he should have retired years ago. So it was interesting that they took that approach. I thought, look, the crowd really wasn't reacting to this promo. Now, if you were in the building in DC, then tell me differently, but I'm just telling you how it came across on TV. The big high points of the promo, it didn't seem like the crowd was reacting the way that I would have expected them to. But I thought AJ did a hell of a job with this. I thought it was a really good promo. I like the fact that they're taking a bit of a different approach with this. My hope, I can't say my expectation, but my hope is that if they do move ahead and we get the contract signing segment on TV tomorrow night from the PC, that we don't get Dead Man Undertaker. Or at least if he comes out as the Dead Man, he you know, takes a different approach in terms of how he cuts his promo and how he speaks, and he's more human. Yeah, if they're going to do Raw tomorrow from the PC with no crowd and a short aisleway, I don't see the need for Undertaker to come out and do his whole Dead Man entrance. I think if ever there was a week for The Undertaker to show up in jeans and a shirt, his hair done back in a ponytail, pair of sunglasses, to come out as Mark Calloway, this is it. And there are precedents for this before. We've seen this on television before over the years. Undertaker has done this before while he was the Dead Man. He did it back in 97 and 98 a few times. You know, where he came out, it was almost like a work shoot on Vince McMahon or whoever it was at the time. Kane and Paul Bear, he came out. Actually, I think what happened is, if I remember the story, I think his luggage was lost. Because there was an episode of Raw back in 98 where he may have been coming out to address the whole Paul Bearer Kane situation, you know, back in the summer of 98. And he came out, and I think he had like a denim shirt, and he had jeans. He just looked like Mark Calloway. But I think the reason for that was, I think his luggage got lost. But he looked pretty badass. You know, it's 2020. We understand he's not a dead man. He's not an undead zombie. We've seen him in documentaries. Look, we saw him on the WWE Network just a few weeks ago as Mark Calloway, sitting there like a normal human being, telling stories to Stone Cold Steve Austin. If AJ Styles is going to go on TV and call out Mark Calloway and talk about how he's married to Michelle McCool, he can't be coming out as Dead Man Undertaker on Monday night. He can't be coming out and talking about, you know, ripping holes and taking souls and sticking things up holes or whatever it is that he does. He's got to come out as, you know, in his human form and confront AJ Styles. Now, is that as the American Badass? I don't expect him to ride a motorcycle down to the ring at the Performance Center, if that's what you're thinking. It doesn't have to be the American Badass. He's got to come out and be Mark Calloway. AJ Styles called out Mark Calloway. That's who he called out. I'm going to be very disappointed if he comes out as anything but Mark Calloway. But I like this. I like what they did with this. We had MVP in the ring. I love how now they just trot out MVP to get his ass kicked whenever they need him. MVP was in the ring. He was in the middle of cutting a promo when all of a sudden Edge arrived. And Edge, you know, he exits the black SUV. He's looking for Randy Orton. He comes down to the ring. He's calling out Orton. MVP, though, he's calling out Edge. He's saying, look, you know, hey, he's focused. He would love Edge to be part of a new stable that he would form. Edge is not paying any attention to MVP. MVP is getting very upset. He's getting very frustrated. MVP asked Edge, hey, how's your wife? And Edge gave him a spear. Randy Orton, he attacked from behind. Edge fought him off. Edge gave Randy an RKO. He gave him his own move. And so he grabbed two chairs. He was going to give Orton the concerto. Orton escaped. He ran up to the stage. He's standing there. He's staring at Edge. And instead, Edge gives MVP a concerto. And the crowd is chanting one more time. Finally, a situation where it makes sense. MVP is the heel. So they're chanting one more time. Edge does it again. He gives the fans what they want. And then he just stood there, staring at Randy Orton from afar until eventually he finally decided to exit the ring and go running after Randy Orton. That was a little goofy to me. That part was a little goofy when you consider that Randy Orton assaulted the man's wife. He didn't call Edge a mean name. He didn't interfere in Edge's match the week before on TV. He physically assaulted the man's wife, not to mention what he did to Edge. Edge just stands there and stares at him. Oh, there's Randy. I'll just stare at him. Are you kidding me? Anybody in Edge's shoes, they'd be all over Orton like white on rice. He's content to just stand there and stare. And I'll have people come to me and go, well, Solo Monster, he's unhinged. Edge is crazy. He does stuff like that. He looked like a fucking idiot. Go after the guy. Don't just stand there and stare at him. Go after him. Aleister Black and the Monday Night Messiah, they had a match that was interrupted by Murphy and AOP for the DQ. This was all just a setup for an 8-man tag with the Messiah, Murphy, AOP, against the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders. Rezar of AOP suffered a torn right biceps during the match. This is per the Observer. I went back and I wanted to see where the injury may have happened. And it looks like there's one part where he catches Montez Ford coming off the top rope for a high cross body. And then he sort of just chucks him over his head the way that Scott Hall used to do in his matches. Kind of like a fall-away slam. So then he tags out and, you know, the rest of the match, he stays in the match. He still was getting physical here and there, but you could tell he was keeping his arm at his side like he knew he was hurt. And that's tough because AOP came back not too long ago. I think both of them were hurt. At least one of them was hurt, maybe both of them. Coming back from injury, and now they're part of this stable with, you know, Rollins and Murphy. And if he needs surgery and he has to be out for a number of months, it's a tough break for him. But you know what? If WWE ends up having to completely shut down, which is still very possible. Again, these empty building shows at the PC, they may not be allowed to go on if this thing, you know, this virus stuff continues to kind of spiral out of control. It is not out of the realm of possibility that WWE may have to shut down all shows at some point. If that were to happen, you know what? Maybe now is the best time for him to get that injury taken care of and start rehabbing, given the climate and everything that's going on. But it's still a tough break for him. It sucks. Montez Ford, you know, he did a big flip dive. He took out everybody outside the ring. Rollins, though, he managed to avoid the dive. He gave Ford a curb stomp as he got back into the ring and pinned him. Kevin Owens came out when the match was over. He attacked Seth Rollins. He gave stunners to Akam. He gave a stunner to Murphy. Rollins gave Owens two curb stomps and then a third one right before they went off the air. 316 Day tomorrow, as I mentioned earlier, there is an appearance scheduled by Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Undertaker, scheduled to be there for a contract signing with AJ Styles. It will be the first time that Monday Night Raw has ever been broadcast from the WWE Performance Center. We saw SmackDown on Friday, which I'm going to talk about that here in a second. A show that had a very entertaining announce team. I don't know if the announce team will be as entertaining tomorrow night. But, you know, there's a certain novelty to this. There's a certain novelty to seeing these shows with no audience at the PC. The longer this goes on for, the novelty is going to wear off, though, very quickly. The British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, he was officially announced this week on Corey Graves' After the Bell podcast for the WWE Hall of Fame, class of 2020. No idea if there will even be a Hall of Fame ceremony this year. If there is, my guess is there aren't likely to be any fans present, which would be the one good thing to come out of this virus outbreak. I've been advocating for a fan-free Hall of Fame ceremony for years now. I may finally get my wish, although I wish it were under different circumstances. But given all of the travel restrictions going on, I wonder if the Jushin Thunder Liger induction is in jeopardy. We've heard nothing about Liger. Liger is the last lone rumored name. All the other rumored names, whether it was WrestleVotes or The Observer, I think Wrestling Inc. broke the story, if I remember, on one of the Hall of Fame inductees, JBL, I think it was. All of the rumors have come to pass. The only name we have not heard about is Jushin Thunder Liger, who would have to come in from Japan. And you know, I'm not sure that his induction may not be in jeopardy with everything that's going on now if they feel he wouldn't be able to make it in for any kind of Hall of Fame ceremony. So if his induction was planned and then gets bumped because of all this stuff that's going on, that sucks. You know, that would really suck. So we'll see. They still have some time to make the announcement, but there's been no mention of him at all. And Ian sent me this message on Facebook. It was a link to a tweet from Arya Daivari of 205 Live, which I could not see because apparently the coward has me blocked. But I guess he was responding to a fan who posted an image of Becky Lynch basically being bear hugged by a fan during a meet and greet. It looked to be from WrestleMania weekend last year. I guess he was asking if we really needed a virus to make stuff like this not okay. I gotta tell you, that is hardly the only time that that's happened. I've seen these fans putting their arms around Becky and Alexa Bliss and some of the other women, and the women look as uncomfortable as you will ever see another human being look. Those photos are gross. These dudes need to keep their damn hands to themselves. Some of these poses, the way they grab onto them. Look, I know the last time some of these guys probably saw female genitalia is when they came out of their mother's womb, but that doesn't give you the right to slobber all over these women. It's just creepy. I can't believe they even allow that. So he's right. Virus or no virus, there should be a policy, I think, that bans that kind of stuff from happening. A handshake is fine. Actually, today, I guess a handshake is not fine. I was going to say, a hearty handshake is the way to go, but maybe now, I guess you can't do that anymore. I guess you got to do the fist bump or the elbow bump, right? When things get back to normal, a handshake is fine. Maybe even a quick hug. All the bear hugs and the waist locks, though, they should be barred. It's just creepy as all hell. Hey, all you men out there, listen up. I want you to take a second and look down. Made you look. But no, seriously, look down and ask yourself, when the last time was that you shaved your junk? It's time to stop beating around the bush, your bush, and take action. Manscaped is our sponsor this week, and they're the only company with the balls to do anything about it. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming and hygiene, and it's changing the game with its new Perfect Package 3.0 Essentials Kit. The perfect tools for your family jewels. The Perfect Package 3.0 comes with the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, their waterproof cordless body trimmer featuring a cutting-edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents, thanks to the company's advanced skin-safe technology. Keyword there is safe. One of the cooler features on this new trimmer, I have my own right over here, it's got an LED light to help illuminate the area and help with a more precise trim. They're always thinking of these things. You could be standing in the middle of a dark tunnel and not get one nick on your body. Now, why you would be manscaping in the middle of a tunnel, I don't know, but I'm not here to judge. You manscape wherever the hell you feel like manscaping, so long as you're not breaking any laws. And don't forget the Crop Preserver, their anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits, and if you don't, you should, you sweaty beast. So why wouldn't you put deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? Right now, when you purchase the new Perfect Package 3.0 kit at manscaped.com, you get the biggest bang for your buck. Subscribers get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered right to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer always stays fresh and clean. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, which is a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. It's the perfect package for your perfect package. Right now, get 20% off and free shipping when you use the code SOLOMONSTER at checkout on manscaped.com. Help me help you and support the Sound Off all at the same time. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code SOLOMONSTER. Your partner, your body, and your balls will thank you. SmackDown on Fox was originally scheduled to take place at the Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, but Cyrus the Virus changed all of that. Instead, we got our first ever episode of SmackDown live from the WWE Performance Center in Orlando. And maybe the weirdest WWE show that I have ever seen in 30 plus years of watching the product. The first ever empty arena show. I've heard of empty arena matches. I've not seen a complete empty arena WWE show from start to finish. Although there have been some SmackDown tapings over the years that were almost empty arenas, but not quite. They made the best of a bad situation. And they did so on very short notice, so credit to everybody involved who helped put the show together. And the talent, I'm sure it wasn't easy. And this may be the new norm going forward. Again, I said earlier, maybe several months of this, because I don't see things getting better in the near term. They had just shot NXT Live from the PC on Wednesday. Funny enough, unrelated to all of the coronavirus stuff, Full Sail just happened to not be available that day. And so they decided, we're going to make this fan appreciation night, and they did an NXT show from the PC. Little did they know when they had Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa destroying part of the PC in that brawl on Wednesday, that they would have to get everything cleaned up in time to go live on Fox on Friday. They did the show without anybody in the stands, although it was a little unnerving because they had all the chairs set up. Like, they probably could have just done away with the chairs. Looked like a bunch of ghosts, a bunch of John Cena's just sitting in the crowd. So you see all these empty seats, but there's no people. And the only people allowed there were essential staff, you know, production crew, you know, people like that. They didn't want to put anybody in harm's way who did not need to be there, which is why you didn't see any of the PC guys, NXT talent, just stares like seat fillers. The whole point was, we only want essential staff. We don't want any fans in the crowd because we're not looking to put people at risk. So we got a sea of empty chairs. Triple H opened the show, introducing us to the Performance Center and telling us that they're going to do what they do best. They're going to put smiles on people's faces. Like a clown. No pyro, obviously. All the pyro people are going to be very upset. It could be months before we see pyro again. Actually, with all the money that the company stands to lose, we may never see pyro again. The whole point was, pyro, they were cutting costs. They're going to probably have to start cutting costs again by the time this is all done and over with. So, anyway, not outside of Saudi Arabia, I wouldn't expect much pyro coming your way. But we did get lots of lasers. We did get lots of lasers. I thought they were broadcasting from a fucking bank vault. There were so many lasers. Triple H joined Michael Cole on commentary for what was only supposed to be one match. He ended up coming back out after the commercial break. So unless that was planned, it may have been a case where they saw the positive response that his commentary was getting on social media, and they just sent him back out there. He was easily one of the highlights of the entire show. I would not mind a Triple H Michael Cole announce combo on SmackDown, at least for as long as they have to run these empty building shows. There was a point where Cole must have run to the bathroom during a commercial break, and when they came back, Triple H said, luckily, they had not been affected by the run on toilet paper, and he patted Cole on the shoulder. He wore multiple hats on this show, did Triple H, and he played makeup artist at one point. He used a Sharpie to color in Michael Cole's soul patch, to turn it from gray to black. He even played cameraman at one point, told Cole they were shorthanded, and so he had to fill in. He said, we can't all just have one job and not be very good at it and still have a job, Cole. So he was just ragging on Cole the entire time. You know, look, they have a good relationship. If you ever watch any of the documentaries or specials on the PC and NXT, Michael Cole, you always see him sitting in on those meetings. So the two of them are constantly working together. Cole is a constant presence there at the Performance Center. They were just having fun. They were having fun. I think it came across that way on TV. Sasha Banks and Bayley, they were the first ones out, and this was just very weird. It felt like a tough enough audition. It was also weird to see them playing to the empty seats as though there were actually people in them, because that's what they've been trained to do. That's what they train you to do, right? You got to come out, you got to look here, you got to pose, you got to do all these things. But when there's no people in the stands and they continue to do it anyway, it's just, but look, it's their first time doing this. You got to cut them some slack. They wanted to know where Paige was. Paige was due to confront Bayley on this show, which was a very random thing for them to promote. I can't imagine that they've cleared her, but you know, Daniel Bryan got cleared and Edge got cleared. So if they want to clear a woman with scoliosis and screws in her neck, well, hey, that's on them. I don't think that's very wise, but that's on them. They claimed that Paige had travel issues. So instead, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross came out. They cut a promo on them, which led to a tag team match playa. When they cut the commercial, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if they just kept wrestling or if they just stopped. because without a live crowd, they could technically just stand there and go over their spots. And then when you get the 10-second countdown, you just start wrestling again. Well, somebody watching the international feed tweeted out a video from the break. And in case you were wondering, yes, indeed. They did stand there and they stopped wrestling during the break. And they were all just waiting to get their cue from the referee that they were coming back live. You could even hear Michael Cole and Triple H yapping, talking to each other on commentary. Brought me back to the days of the C-band satellite stuff 20 years ago during the Raw and SmackDown tapings. And, you know, even before the shows, they would have the dark matches. And if you have the right channel for a certain satellite feed, you can watch all of this stuff. You know, they would air stuff. It would get leaked online. People would upload videos. There were a whole bunch of Michael Cole ones from like the early 2000s and 2003, like around that period, with him and Lawler, him and Taz talking off the air. The one with him and Vince McMahon, where it was obvious that Cole was getting Red the Riot Act on headset for something. I've got them all saved from years ago.
Hey, Vince. Do you want me to say that every time? Because I said this shitload of times tonight. Okay. Yes, sir. So you want... Yes, sir. Yep. Okay, I got it, sir. I just didn't know if you want me to hit it every time, but I'll do that from now on. Okay, you got it. Thank you.
The end is near.
Why are these... This is a good idea. Can we eat these?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know if they were like gimmicked or something. How come when I sit out here, the only women that ever look at me are the fat ones? They wave and stuff.
That happens to JR every night.
Look at this chick. Little girl.
Where?
Nikki Cross was trying to rally the invisible fans at one point while she was waiting for the hot tag. I guess old habits die hard. Asuka showed up, attacked Alexa outside the ring, which allowed Sasha to lock on the bank statement on Nikki for the submission win. Triple H said that Asuka blended in with the crowd, and because of that, nobody saw her coming. Michael Cole was in the ring to interview the big dog, Roman Reigns, about his match with Goldberg at WrestleMania. He brought up the critics not being happy with the way that he inserted himself into the WrestleMania main event. Several times, they refer to this match as the main event of WrestleMania, so we know what match they think is the main event. And it ain't Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre actually won the Royal Rumble match, which is supposed to send you to the WrestleMania main event, but as many before him, Alberto Del Rio, Edge, Sheamus, there's been quite a few Royal Rumble winners who were promised the main event of WrestleMania, and they ended up opening the show. Or at least not going on last. But he asked, why is it okay? This is Roman now. Roman's answer to this was to ask, why is it okay for me to main event all of the live events, but not main event WrestleMania? I'm in Youngstown, Ohio. I'm in the main event. I'm in this city. I'm in that city. And I'm headlining everywhere I go. Why shouldn't I be in the main event of WrestleMania? That, by the way, is not a valid answer. That's the best they could come up with to explain why he just walks in and says to Goldberg, I'm next. And then, voila, he's the number one contender. He says, I'm full-time, Goldberg is part-time. He's a part-timer, and we just don't have time for that here, is what Roman Reigns said about Bill Goldberg. Or was he talking about John Cena? Oh, no, wait, maybe he was talking about The Undertaker. Oh, no, Edge. No, definitely Edge. He must have been talking about Edge. You could say the same damn thing about half the WrestleMania card this year. So, I thought as an environment to do a sit-down interview segment like this, it worked. I don't like it when they cut to a pre-tape, let's say with Cole or Renee Young or somebody sitting down to do an interview, and you can hear the crowd noise in the background. You could do that maybe sometimes, but you always hear the crowd noise. And I feel like sometimes it really does take away from some of these segments. When they got snowed in And they had to do that one episode of Raw after the Royal Rumble, about 5 years ago, whatever it was, from Stanford. We got a Roman Reigns sit-down interview. And it was one of the better interviews that he has ever done. So this worked better, I think, than it would have worked if they had done this in front of the crowd. They risked having some people, you know, the boo birds, who maybe didn't like his explanation, may have booed him. So I thought that that worked. The material, though, is just, it's tired. Tired material. They're going with the same story I said they would a few weeks ago. A recycled version of the story that they used with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar going into WrestleMania 34 2 years ago. It's the same damn story. Trying to get Roman cheered by ragging on the other guy and saying, though, he's a part-timer. The only difference is this time, it's babyface against babyface. I know they booed Goldberg a few weeks ago, but they were going to boo him that night no matter what. They were very unhappy that he beat The Fiend and took the championship. And now they won't have to worry. You know, whenever they put Goldberg on TV, he's going to be on SmackDown, I think, this week. Guess what? They're spared. They don't have to worry about a negative crowd reaction because there's no fucking crowd. Who could have predicted that? But they get no crowd. So they can basically put these guys out there and tell whatever story they want and not have to worry about the fans sabotaging it, booing both guys out of the building. I had some people say to me, you know, do you think that their match at WrestleMania is going to be basically a repeat of Goldberg and Brock Lesnar from WrestleMania 20, where the fans don't like either guy and they boo them out of the building? No. Not unless they postpone WrestleMania until later in the year. If they move ahead with it, they don't have to worry about it. They no longer have to worry about those crowd reactions. You could say that's a good thing. You could say that's a bad thing. As I said earlier, wrestling, you know, the crowd is part of the show, good, bad, or indifferent. You take the crowd away, yeah, maybe you can dictate now, you know, the kind of reaction that you want to get. I'm not so sure that no reaction, though, is always the best reaction. But that's where we are. So they're going to have a contract signing on TV this week for their WrestleMania match. Triple H returned to commentary. Again, they sent him away for a segment. He came back right out, cracked a joke about how, you know, I can get demoted and yet somehow get busier. And he was mocking a report in The Observer this week about Triple H getting what Meltzer claims some behind the scenes have referred to as a quiet demotion. Going from the executive vice president of talent, live events, and creative to his new corporate title, which apparently started a number of months ago, but it was in some of the corporate filings and people started to pick up on it. His new title of executive vice president of global talent strategy and development. So he was moved out of the role as the head of talent relations. Some of those responsibilities have since been assigned to Vince McMahon's chief of staff. I love how Vince has a chief of staff. And instead, his main duties are now set to be focused on NXT. I don't know if that's a demotion or not. It could be a lateral move. I don't know. Maybe he's not being paid any less. You know, to me, a demotion is also, you know, you get your pay sliced a little bit. I don't think Triple H is hurting for money right now. Maybe Triple H wanted out of talent relations. I've heard that it's a thankless job. How many people have been in that role who have done interviews who have said it's a thankless job? Jim Ross was the head of talent relations for years, and he would describe it that way. John Laurinaitis had it for a while. It sounds like a thankless job where you have to basically be the bad guy that Vince McMahon doesn't always want to be himself. So he'll go to the head of talent relations and tell them to deliver the bad news. Now, that doesn't really happen a lot these days, as much as it used to. WWE rarely fires people and lets them go, because they just want to hoard as much talent as they can. But, you know, I don't envy Jim Ross, someone like Jim Ross, having to be in that position 15, 20 years ago, where, you know, they want to fire somebody or get rid of somebody, and it's like, hey, JR, you know, you go deliver the bad news. I'm not going to do it, you do it, that's your job. So maybe it was his choice. Maybe he was overwhelmed by all of the work that he has, and he's like, look, maybe we can pass some of these responsibilities on to someone else. So I wouldn't exactly look any more into this. People were looking for conspiracy theories here. What does this mean? Has Vince McMahon lost faith in Triple H? Is Triple H not going to be the next in line? People are reading far too much into this. This is, I think, a whole bunch of nothing. Jeff Hardy is back. The most anticlimactic return, I guess, since John Morrison randomly appeared a few months ago in Miz's dressing room after being away for like 8 years. It's like, there he is. Almost a year on the shelf after his knee surgery and then all the other personal stuff he you know, had to deal with. And Caleb Braxton introduces my guest at this time, and there's Jeff Hardy. And voila, Jeff Hardy is back. And he's interrupted by King Corbin. Jeff informs him that they're going to have a match later in the show. We have another segment in the back where Daniel Bryan approaches Drew Gulak. They had a great professional wrestling match at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Gulak lost. And I was saying at the time when I did my live stream, when I reviewed it, I said, I hope this isn't the end. Maybe Bryan now has a newfound respect for Gulak and they can wrestle again or end up being tag team partners for all we know. And Bryan told Gulak, he said, you know, you told me that I had holes in my game and you were right. And he asked Gulak if he would agree to teach him what those holes were. Sami Zayn, Cesaro, Shinsuke Nakamura, they showed up. And Zayn was mocking Bryan and gave him the chance to come join up with them. And anyway, this led to a match being made. Bryan said, I'll face Cesaro, I'll meet you out there. And he went out to the ring. Now, they replayed the entire SmackDown Tag Team Title Elimination Chamber match from the pay-per-view. I turned away from the show at this point because I already saw the match. It was good, it wasn't that good. And I get that they had time to kill. They did the same thing after that Royal Rumble, post-Royal Rumble episode of Raw that I mentioned, where Roman Reigns was in studio. They basically did the entire show from Titan Tower. They replayed the entire Royal Rumble match on TV. They had to find a way to kill time. They were caught flat-footed. They had to come up with some way to fill 3 hours. What better way than to play an hour of a Royal Rumble match? So they played the entire Elimination Chamber match here. Whatever. Again, I can't fault them because they were put in an impossible situation on very short notice. I hope this does not become a regular occurrence, though, where they just replay long matches from recent pay-per-views on television just to kill time. They did that on SmackDown on Fox, and they only had 2 hours to fill. Tomorrow night, they've got three. We're going to have 3 hours of Raw, at least this week, if not every week going forward. In an empty performance center. They're going to have to find a way to kill time. I'd suggest, if they have no choice but to replay old matches, throw up a classic match. I never understood, you know, this whole thing about they have this vast archive of classic content on the network, and I get that that isn't the big selling point for the WWE Network. The people who are subscribed to the network are paying $9.99 to get all the pay-per-views, to get all the pay-per-views for one low price. That's the reason why most people subscribe to the network. The next reason would be you get NXT takeovers. They have some great documentary specials and stuff. You know, the day of specials, the 24 specials, the Broken Skull sessions, Table for Three, stuff like that. But if you never promote the fact that you have this vast archive of classic content, not everything is just the Monday Night Wars and the Attitude Era, for fuck's sake. I mean, finally they're doing this series on Ruthless Aggression. I've only seen the Brock Lesnar episode so far, by the way. I've not seen the Evolution one. I have not seen the John Cena one. I have a lot of catching up to do, and with everything going on, I may be able to catch up with them soon enough. I didn't watch the Brock Lesnar one, though. I enjoyed it. But there's so many other eras of WWE, you know, going back even farther. And other promotions, too. You know, they're doing a big content drop, I believe tomorrow, of new WCW Saturday Night episodes from 1993. You'll never hear WWE promoting it. And I never understood that. You know, maybe the reason people don't watch the classic content as much is because they're not really aware that you keep dropping new classic content. I certainly never hear them mention it or plug it on TV. So one of the benefits, if you've got a lot of downtime with everything going on for the next few weeks, the next few months, maybe use this as an opportunity to do a better job of promoting the fact that you've got all this classic wrestling content. And every time you trot out these legends on TV, like an Undertaker or a Ric Flair or a Sting or someone like that, don't forget where these guys came from. And maybe show clips or highlights or even a full match from a big WCW pay-per-view back in the early 90s or a big WWF pay-per-view back in the late 80s or the early 90s. You know, pick a big match, pick an exciting match where something big happened. Show that on TV and say, you want to see more? Subscribe to the WWE Network. We'll give you a free month you've got this gigantic library of content that you could dive into. How do you know that there's not all this interest in the classic content if you never promote it? I'd like to see them do that. I know there may be younger fans who don't really care about that stuff from 30 years ago, but me personally, if they wanted to throw up an old match from back then, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't turn away either. I'd sit there and watch it. So Miz and Morrison were in the ring in the PC doing their promo segment in front of an empty crowd. And they were admiring their big win at the Elimination Chamber, and they were talking about their movies. You know, John Morrison, during his time off, did this Dog the Bounty Hunter. Well, not Dog the Bounty Hunter. What did he call himself? He was a bounty hunter in this movie. Forgot what he called himself in the movie. That wasn't Dog. Buff the Bounty Hunter. I don't know what the fuck he called himself, but he did some bounty hunter movie. And Miz was talking about his Marine movies, and anyway, yeah, they were fine. I thought they were annoying, playing the role of annoying heels. Triple H noted that Miz and Morrison were excellent without crowd noise. Said it's because they never actually hear any crowd noise. He was ragging on everybody. Triple H was burying everybody on this show. He felt like he was in the zone. Triple H looked like he had a big smile on his face. He was really having a lot of fun. I think it took him back. It took him back to his days 20 years ago when he was doing a lot more burying than he does today. He seemed to be very happy ragging on everybody. So Michael Cole talked about the rumors of Rob Gronkowski coming to WWE, and Mojo Rawley joined him and Triple H at the desk to hype up. You know, Mojo's all about hype. And he was there to hype up Gronk coming to SmackDown next week. And he and Triple H then physically assaulted Michael Cole. They were shaking him. It was like two jocks roughing up the nerd and stuffing him in the locker in high school. Ryan Satin broke the news on WWE backstage of Gronkowski being close to a deal with WWE. The deal is done. It's either done or just about done. And it's said to be a Ronda Rousey type of deal where he comes in, he does some big matches. It's not just like a one-time thing. I suppose he could do WrestleMania if there even is a WrestleMania this year. If they have like a battle royal, he could be part of it. He could win it. SummerSlam is in Boston. The belief is that he'll have a big role or a big match in Boston, which only makes sense. He played for the Patriots his entire career. He retired 2 years ago, but he was a Patriot his entire career. He'll be beloved if he walks out. And if they do, I hope that they actually have things back to normal by then, because you want to have that big crowd in Boston there to cheer for this guy when he walks out. You know, he's only 30 years old. It's not like he's some completely broken down NFL guy in his mid-30s or late-30s. He's only 30. He's still a young guy. He retired young. Yeah, I'm sure he's had a whole bunch of concussions and stuff. I don't think he's been injury-plagued too much. He's got a ton of charisma. You know, he's a good fit for pro wrestling. I think a match here and there is fine. I know Steve Harvey isn't necessarily his biggest fan. One of the funniest things I've seen all year was actually on New Year's Eve. You know, Steve Harvey has his New Year's Eve show, and he had Gronk was there. And he was kind of co-hosting for part of the show. And I don't know who did this, but somebody had put together this giant Lego mold of Steve Harvey. It actually looked like him. It looked like Steve Harvey. It was amazing. And I'm sure that he wanted to take that home with him and probably show it to his family and put it on display. And Gronk had other ideas. And I don't know what possessed him to do this. I would imagine he was probably three sheets to the wind at this point. But he's also Gronk, so he's just a fucking crazy guy. He puts the microphone down, and Steve Harvey's like, "What are you doing?" And he grabs the Lego mold of Steve Harvey. He grabs Lego Steve Harvey. He picks it up like a football, and he spikes it on the ground. And the Legos shatter all over the place. And the Legos were not the only thing that shattered. You could see Steve's heart shatter as the Legos crashed to the ground. He couldn't believe it. And then he said, "I don't want to work with this guy anymore." I think he was genuinely upset. I really think he wanted to take that home. And Gronk is like, "Nope." And he spikes it and just destroys the whole thing. I laughed, but I could see the guy's heart breaking as it was happening. So probably not a fan of Gronkowski is Steve Harvey. We had Daniel Bryan against Cesaro. I'd love to tell you that they went out there and had a 15-20 minute classic, even in front of an empty audience, but they only went about 5 or 6 minutes, so this was only a taste of what these two guys could do. It was good, but it never really had the chance to get going, because they just really didn't give it a whole lot of time. There was this brutal, you know, how Cesaro propels the guy up into the air and hits him with a European uppercut or a forearm on the way down. He did that to Bryan and wrecked the dude as Bryan fell to the ground. But Bryan pinned him with a cradle, and again, hopefully a taste of what these two guys can do down the road if you give them another 10 or 12 minutes. I think they could really put on a, you know, like what Gulak and Bryan had at the pay-per-view. I'd love to see Cesaro and Bryan. Maybe do Cesaro and Bryan at WrestleMania. You know, I'm sure they have other plans with probably Bryan and Gulak. Maybe they'll do a tag match or something. But this was fun. We had Jeff Hardy and King Corbin. The opposite of fun. Out comes King Corbin. And they're having a match, and Elias is on commentary. Because they're building to something at WrestleMania with Corbin and Elias. And Corbin is shouting down to Elias on commentary, "Why are you out here? What are you doing out here?" And so he's distracted. Jeff hits Corbin with what Michael Cole called the Twist of Fury, which is apparently the new name of the move, unless Cole misspoke. Matt Hardy had to go on Twitter. He was answering a fan question and said, "It's not a question of ownership. Jeff and WWE," he says, "are 100% free to call it the Twist of Fate if that's what they want to do. I'm not stopping them from doing it. That's false. That's a lie. He would never do anything to hinder his brother," he says. Or gender. He would never hinder the gender. He hits the Twist of Fury, prompted Triple H to shout, "What a maneuver!" Swanton Bomb finishes things off. They're building to a Baron Corbin-Elias match at WrestleMania. If ever there was a match that just screamed bathroom break, that's the match. Michael Cole interviewed John Cena in the ring. Cole asked Cena about his match against The Fiend at WrestleMania. Mentioned that he beat Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30 6 years ago. And that Wyatt blames his downward spiral on Cena. Cena says, "Far too many guys around here blame me for their failures. They're lazy. They're complacent." He noted that Bray became lazy after his loss at WrestleMania 30. And it's interesting how it's always my fault. He goes, "I always win. I always bury people." And then he rattled off a whole bunch of big matches that he lost. He says, "I lost to The Miz in the main event of WrestleMania. I lost to CM Punk in Money in the Bank. I lost to The Rock at WrestleMania. I was annihilated by Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. I was squashed by The Undertaker at WrestleMania." And you could also throw in, you know, losses to Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam, AJ Styles at SummerSlam. Both clean losses. No controversy, no interference, no cheating. It's not even up for debate. John Cena has lost quite a lot of big matches. Nobody is debating that. It's not about the individual matches, though. It's about the important matches. And he won a few that he had no business winning. That's the issue. The Wyatt match being one of them. And when he lost those matches, every single match that he mentioned there against, "I lost to The Miz," which was because of The Rock, but "I lost to The Miz, I lost to this guy, I lost to that guy." Cena was already a made guy. He was already an established name. He was the biggest name in the company. So there's a big difference between talking about, you know, losing big matches like that if you're John Cena, as opposed to Bray Wyatt, who, for all intents and purposes at the time, was a nobody. He was still a relatively new guy looking to break through. A win over John Cena at WrestleMania would have gone quite the distance in helping him break through. And that was really before Cena started losing a lot of matches. Yeah, he had already lost to Cena or to Miz and The Rock by that point. He had lost some matches, but that win would have meant a lot more to Bray Wyatt at that time than the win meant to John Cena. And I know that they ended up having two more. There was a cage match. I think Wyatt won the cage match, which was that goofy finish with the kid that scared John. You know, we made the jokes about how he's scared of children. Now we know why. And then, of course, to end the feud, Cena won that match. But that WrestleMania win still sticks out to this day. So, but there's a big difference. Cena can talk about, or they could have Cena talk about all these things about, I lose a lot of matches, but that's, you're not even getting the point. It's not about the individual matches. It's about more than that. Cole wondered why John Cena even accepted Bray Wyatt's challenge. Cena said the fans should not invest in Bray Wyatt. They should be investing in Drew McIntyre and Tommaso Ciampa, Matt Riddle, Velveteen Dream. Invest in those names, he said. Wyatt has already had 5 or 6 chances. He doesn't deserve another one. He is a failure. That is the message that John Cena was conveying here about Bray. In case you didn't know, Bray Wyatt is winning this match. I cannot imagine that John Cena would have John Cena burying him like this on television in promos and then go on and beat him again at WrestleMania. So if there's one of the 3 or 4 big matches being promoted this year for WrestleMania where I am confident in who the winner will be after listening to this, it's the fact that Bray Wyatt will beat John Cena. Of course, that is if WrestleMania even goes on. The only thing that will deprive Bray Wyatt of a win is a virus. Otherwise, I think it's safe to say they're setting up for Wyatt to get his win back here. Mr. Rogers Wyatt was in the crowd listening. And he got into the ring and he was cutting his own promo on John Cena. He said, I'm not sick. John, you're the one who's sick. Said, Cena doesn't care about the future. He only cares about himself. He only cares about being in the spotlight. And Wyatt thinks about that loss to Cena 6 years ago. He thinks about it all the time. He says that the voices in his head after that wouldn't stop. So instead, he embraced them. He started listening to them. The voices took his broken world and turned it into the Firefly Funhouse. So they went nose to nose, face to face, and Wyatt asked Cena to let me in. And footage of the Fiend flashed on screen. They cut back to a darkened PC, and you heard that piped-in Wyatt laughter in the background as they went off the air. I thought the segment was really well done. We can quibble about the content and the substance of what Cena said. I already talked about that, but I thought both guys did a hell of a job. I thought it worked better in this empty building than it would have probably in front of a live audience. So I thought this was really good. And I still, though, after watching all of this, I have not changed my mind. I still maintain that this would have been better with the Universal title at stake and John Cena chasing after title number 17. He could have cut that same promo and talked about how he doesn't deserve it. You know, instead of talking about how don't invest in this guy, invest in the future, it could have been he doesn't deserve it. Why do I want the championship? Why do I want to win title number 17? Because it disgusts me that this guy can stand here and say all these things about how what I did to him 6 years ago and all that, and he's the champion and he walks around. That's not what a champion does. I have to do this. I have to get that belt off of him because he doesn't deserve it. And then you have the dueling stories. On the one hand, Cena trying to chase the record. On the other hand, Bray Wyatt trying to avenge his loss at WrestleMania. Something's got to give. They both can't get what they want. Only one guy can win. That's the story. I have not changed my mind. This would have been better with title number 17 being part of the story. But what they did here I thought was very good. You know, it's not like the match. I'm not a fan of the story. I just think it would have been served a lot better. So this felt like a novelty show. I enjoyed it as something different. The idea of doing this every week, 3 times a week, doing it on Monday, doing it on Wednesday, doing it on Friday in front of no audience at the PC for what could be a while, it's going to wear thin real quick. You know, the talent, they need an audience to play off of, but they're stuck. So as long as this continues, it's really the only option they have. Now, NXT was live from the Performance Center in Orlando because Full Sail was unavailable. It's going to be unavailable for a lot longer now. I thought it was a good show, not very exciting, until the ending. I loved the show-closing brawl around the PC with Gargano and Ciampa. Keith Lee, he delivered the BBC to Cameron Grimes and finished him off to retain his North American title. Damian Priest came out with his baton. He attacked Keith Lee with it. Dominic Dijakovic came out to chase him away and make the save. And when he went to go hand the North American title to its rightful owner, Keith Lee paid him back by hoisting him up for a powerbomb and leaving him laying. In a puzzling finish, they had Mia Yim pin Dakota Kai off of a botched distraction from Raquel Gonzalez, sending Mia to the number one contender's women's ladder match at TakeOver whenever TakeOver takes place. Gonzalez did lay out Mia after the match. Later in the show, Tegan Nox qualified with a win over Deonna Purrazzo, so this makes even less sense unless the idea is that Dakota is going to sneak her way into that ladder match somehow. That may be the plan here. Kushida beat Raul Mendoza with his cross-arm breaker finish. Later in the show, they cut to the parking lot. They were interviewing Mia Yim. All of a sudden, in the background, you see Raul Mendoza. I don't know what he's doing, if he was going to his car, if he was, you know, taking a drag of a cigarette. I don't know what he was out there doing. But all of a sudden, this, an SUV pulls up. Two men in masks get out of the SUV. They kidnap Mendoza. They throw him into the SUV, and they drive off with him. I mean, first it was Samoa Joe in TNA, and now Raul Mendoza in NXT. These men have to be stopped. Let's hope that this time they actually have a plan for his return. Unlike Russo in TNA, who, according to Joe, couldn't book his way out of a kidnapping. Russo called him, he called him 3 months. They kept Joe off television for 3 months. Joe said it was the best vacation he's ever gotten. He was paid the entire time. He didn't have to work. He figured, all right, they're coming up with, they have some kind of a plan for my return. Nope. He got a call from Vince Russo one day, 3 months later, saying, hey, we're short on baby faces. We need you to come back. So he just came back. That was it. I think some people think back to that angle and they think that when Joe came back, he had the penis tattoo on his face and the machete. But no, when he came back, he was just Samoa Joe. That didn't come until later. Rhea Ripley came to the ring for a promo. She said Charlotte was going to get knocked on her ass at WrestleMania. Charlotte came out to interrupt. They ended up in a brawl. Charlotte put the Bret Hart figure four leg lock around the post on Rhea. I love that move. And that was pretty much it. Just some more hype to get people invested in their match at WrestleMania. We had the Broserweights, Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne, defending the NXT Tag Team Championships against the former champs Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly. The grizzled young veterans from NXT UK came out to cause a distraction that allowed Kyle O'Reilly to get a near fall on an attempted roll-up. And the vets were wiped out when Bobby Fish got backdropped out onto them. Riddle and Dunn hit Kyle O'Reilly with the double knee strikes, and Pete Dunn covered Kyle to retain the titles. Good match. Not quite as epic as their TakeOver match, but this was still very good. The show ended with an excellent tour of the Performance Center with your tour guides, Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. Ciampa came out. He was cutting a promo. He called out Johnny. Johnny popped up on the video screen, and Ciampa was sick and tired of listening to him, so he decided to, as Johnny is still rambling on, he goes to the back. He's going to go looking for him. And he found him in one of the conference rooms. He attacked him. They put a hole in the wall when he threw Gargano up against the wall, and then he tossed him across the conference table desk. That's redundant, I guess, right? Desk, table, it's the same shit. The conference table. So then the fight spilled over into the gymnasium area, and Gargano threw Ciampa through the window of one of the office doors, and it shattered, and that brought back bad memories for me. Gargano kept pummeling Ciampa all around the gym. Ciampa fought back. He picked up this giant free weight. He picked up this giant weight plate. I don't know how much it was, 45 pounds probably, and he chucked it at Gargano, tried to kill him. Gargano moved out of the way, and the weight shattered one of the wall mirrors. That's 7 years of bad luck for Tommaso Ciampa, which means he must be getting called down to Raw or SmackDown very soon. They brawled out into the crowd. Ciampa dragged Gargano over to the announce desk. They ended up in the bird's nest area. So there's that little staircase. I don't know if it's a spiral staircase or not. But right above where the announce desk was, they have like a bird's nest, if you want to call it that, above, probably 10 feet up, I'm guessing. So they brawl up there, and this ended up with Ciampa getting Gargano in position for an air raid crash off the bird's nest, 8 to 10 feet down, through the announce desk. That was actually a hell of a spot, because it looks like they're kind of high up there. There is some height, and they just came crashing down through the announce desk. So I love that was a big spot to end the show with. I love this brawl. I loved it. We got a tour of the Performance Center that we weren't expecting. It was mass carnage. I would have loved... You know what? We were wondering, what would the stipulation be for a Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano match at TakeOver? Maybe they would do a Hell in a Cell. It had to be some kind of a grudge match stip to try to pay this thing off, right? Unless they just wanted to drag this out for a couple more TakeOver shows, which I guess they could do. But now, if they're forced to do TakeOver from the Performance Center, I want them to have just a Falls Count Anywhere match. Why not? Why not do Falls Count Anywhere at the PC if that's where TakeOver is going to end up being, and let these guys expand on their brawl? They can go back to the gym and stuff, but the PC is a big place. They can brawl into the promo. How fun would that be? Like, if you think back to the empty arena match on Halftime Heat with Rock and Mankind, they brawled all over the building. They ended up in the concession area. They ended up in the kitchen. They ended up in one of the offices, and Rock picked up the phone and pretended that he was answering calls and stuff. Mankind's a little busy right now. He's got the Rock's foot in his mouth, and he kicked him in the head. So why not? These guys are brawling all over the place. They have a room with a camera in it. So Triple H back in Stanford can actually see into these rooms at any given moment. It's kind of creepy. Big Brother is watching. But they have a room dedicated to promos. Anytime anybody wants to go in there and just record themselves and practice and rehearse their promos, they can do so. So maybe they brawl into the promo room, and Ciampa gets Gargano down and he sits there in the middle of the match and starts cutting a promo. I mean, you could have some fun with it. I mean, it would be similar to what we already saw here. This was only a taste, I think, of what these guys could do. So now I want to see it. That's what I want now. I want an empty arena match at the PC with these two guys. So this Wednesday, Adam Cole is having his championship celebration as he is only days away from breaking Finn Balor's record as the longest reigning NXT champion of all time. They are crazy if they don't have him defend the title on Wednesday's show, preferably against Balor. But you know what, though? I guess without a crowd, though, it's not going to have the same drama. That's the thing that sucks. If you don't have anybody in the seats, you're going to miss out on all the drama that you would have had from, people hoping and wishing every near fall, hanging onto every close call there that he might actually drop the title and not break the record. But my idea would have been to do the match between Balor and Gargano and then have Walter show up at Full Sail and cost Balor the match. With everything going on, Walter may not even be able to travel into this country. So that's out the window either way. NWA Power was off this week. They took a break. Instead, we got a double episode of The Circle Squared, which is kind of like their little reality type show where talents, independent talents, longtime veteran talents are looking to earn a contract with the National Wrestling Alliance. And the whole thing with Circle and Squared, the Circle is where the desk is, where you go to cut your promo. The square is the ring where you go to wrestle, hence the Circle Squared. So this week we were introduced to Colby Carino, the son of Steve Carino. Last I heard about Colby Carino was a few years ago. He was on TMZ. He was being busted, I think, for drug possession, and he was going down a bad road. He was going down a bad path. Apparently now he's been clean for a couple of years. He's getting his life and his career back together. He's got a young son. I didn't think the promo was really, it wasn't great, but he was clearly very nervous. Here's the thing about this I don't like. I like and I appreciate the concept of the show, but I noticed that on the first episode, I noticed it here as well. They clearly have papers on the desk in front of them. It's like a rundown or an outline for Dave Marquez or Kyle Davis or whoever, Sean Mooney, whoever the announcer is, just to guide them on where they're going with the promo, with the segment. It looked to me like they had papers on the desk with the entire promo written out, because Colby just kept looking down at the desk and it looked to me like he was just reading verbatim off of a sheet. Now, maybe he wasn't. Maybe they don't script out stuff like that, but it looked that way. And that distracted me the entire time. I'm like, dude, look up at the camera. But I guess that's the whole point of a show like this, is that these guys don't really have maybe enough experience to know. that, or they're not comfortable enough yet on promos to just kind of make direct eye contact with the camera, to make direct eye contact with the audience and then cut their promos. So to me, it just looked like he was reading off a sheet of paper. So his opponent was George South. There's a name I haven't heard in a long time. George South came out. Carino is, I mean, probably early 20s, young kid. George South is the opposite. You know, Colby's career is just getting started. George South's career is very much near the end. 57 years old. Looks exactly like you would expect a pro wrestler out of the Deep South to look like 30 years ago. You know, he's been a journeyman to the stars. Every major promotion, NWA, WCW, WWE over the years. You know, he was an enhancement talent. I remember seeing him on Superstars in the early 90s and then back again in the mid-90s. He was having matches on TV with Razor Ramon. He was having matches on TV with The Ultimate Warrior and guys like that. He's been around forever. He's also trained a lot of the names that you see on TV today. I know he trained one half of The Revival. I forget which half. Might have been Dash Wilder. Cedric Alexander, Big Swole, Tessa Blanchard, among others. So, you know, he's known, I think, as much as anything now as being a trainer than he is for anything he ever did in his career. He's healing it up. I mean, he is the classic quintessential, just playing up wrestling heel 101 shit. Every 5 seconds, yelling at the crowd, shut up. You know, easy heat, easy heel heat. They made it very clear who they wanted the people to cheer for and who they wanted the people to boo. And when they cut to the pre-recorded promos, because they also have these videos where they have these earlier sit-down interviews with Colby and earlier sit-down with George South. South apparently also trained Colby Carino. So this was personal. This was a kid that he had trained, who he now was trying to defeat so that he could get something he never got in his entire probably 40-year career, which is a contract with the NWA. That's why this was so important to George South. He was talking a little bit more like a real human being in the back when they were interviewing him. And I was invested in this. I bought into this. I thought that part of it was great. The match itself wasn't great at all. I mean, it really wasn't even much of a match. They also were splicing in footage of Eli Drake and Allison Kay watching this. And they were offering their own comments on what in a total shoot way. About their promo, how they cut their promo, and, you know, trying to offer. And I know some people aren't going to like that because it's too inside for them, but that's the vibe that they're going for here. You have Eli Drake on TV commenting that this person didn't say their name. They forgot to mention their name, or I thought at the end of his promo, you got to go for the big finish at the end of your promo and draw the audience in. And you know, I find it interesting to hear from their perspective on things. I could see where that might be a turnoff, though, for some people. So, they had a match. Colby picked up the win. It was under 5 minutes. You know, he looked okay. But I don't think either one of these guys really shined all that much coming out of the match. But the good guy won and the bad guy lost. It's pretty much, again, wrestling 101 here. The next episode had the women, and we had Freya the Slayer from Alaska. That's her big thing. She's from Alaska. She says the ring is her element, and the promo was what the promo was. she was the one who, Allison and Eli Drake, they were like, she never said her name. She never said, I'm Freya, or I'm Freya the Slayer. She just never mentioned her name. I guess we're all supposed to know what her name is. So they kind of criticized her for that. But again, these people are nervous. You could tell that they're nervous in a lot of cases. Dani Jordan came out. She introduced herself. Her thing is, her gimmick, is that she has a burn book. So it's a notebook with all the people, her opponents, you know, that she's burned before and going to burn in the future. Not literally. I mean, she's not taking a fucking blowtorch to their crotch or anything, but that's her gimmick. She's got a burn book. She's a real mean girl. And she makes fun of Elsa. Of course, she says it's Freya. She goes, oh, I'm sorry. And she has a page for her in the burn book. So, they had a match. This was not very good. Also went about 5 minutes like the match on the previous episode. Not very good. You know, kind of sloppy. But Danny, the thing about Danny was a lot of personality, a lot of charisma with her. She stood out more than Freya did. And now the fans get to vote. They get to go on the NWA website and cast their vote for who they want to see move on, for who they want to have the chance to earn an NWA contract. So the fan voting is a big part of this show. Now, this Tuesday, they're back with an episode of what they're calling Superpower, which is like a, it's almost like a Raw SmackDown Super Show type episode of NWA Power. Nick Aldis and Tom Latimer team up to take on Marty Scurll and Brody King of Villain Enterprises. Tim Storm takes on Jax Dane, the man that he beat to become NWA champion 4 years ago and never forgot. The Rock and Roll Express take on Shooter Stevens in the question mark, and Camille will wrestle her first match and speak her first words on NWA Power this Tuesday. It's time for this week's RSPW Rewind. After a one-week break, I could not think of a better time to bring back the Rewind and take a look back into the days gone by. I long for those days, especially this week. With everything going on, I long for these days. So we have a medley of posts here, including this one that we'll start with from February 10th of 2000. A post by Don T. Pohl titled, Five Signs That You Are a WWF Nerd. Number one, you consider yourself a Jerichoholic. Number two, you think that you're cool because you like heels, such as Kurt Angle. Number three, you hate guys like Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, who basically made the WWF what it is today. Number four, you marked out for the Radicals' debut. And number five, your views on Chris Jericho are totally one-sided. You cannot admit that his wrestling skills are below average. You refuse to accept the fact that the Intercontinental title is a joke. Yeah, Jericho brought a ton of prestige back to it. That's why he jobbed it 2 weeks later in typical WWF fashion. No matter how good a point about Jericho, if it's a negative, then it must be false. If you fit into these five categories, you are a WWF nerd. Sincerely, Don T. Pohl. Certainly not a WWF nerd. Don T. Pohl doesn't seem to like Chris Jericho very much. El Cerdo Loco says, then I guess I am damn proud to be a WWF nerd because I fit every one of those descriptions. Jim says, yawn, yet another disgruntled WCW fan. Let go of your anger, my son. Try not to be so bitter and whiny. It's really annoying. Why don't these people realize that it's painfully obvious they are just crying the blues because WCW now totally sucks and WWF is totally on fire? You don't like it? Too bad. I hope you have a blast sitting around griping about the WWF. It's not going to do anything to change anyone's opinions. Just makes you look like a crybaby. A few days later, on Valentine's Day, a bit of a contradictory title and post by The Wave Man, titled, Looks Like Hogan is Going to the WWF. But then in his post, he says Hogan would never go to the WWF because at best he would be fourth or fifth in the promotion. Triple H, Kane, Mick Foley, The Rock, Big Show, Undertaker, Rikishi are all ahead of him. Even without Foley and Undertaker, it's still five guys that would be ahead of Hogan. And Vince McMahon would never give Hogan the power he would want to control his destiny. At the end of his WCW, at the end of this WCW run, I think Hogan is done with pro wrestling for good. I like that. That's funny. That's funny. I think Hogan is done with pro wrestling for good, or until Eric Bischoff gets hired somewhere else. Hogan was, he was only a few months away from the Bash at the Beach incident with Vince Russo at this time, which turned out to be his final appearance ever for WCW. Jamal, though, this guy knows his shit. He said, if Hogan went to the WWF, Vince would have him job to The Rock ASAP. Over 2 years before it happened. Never forget that Jamal predicted it on RSPW. February 27th, 2000. The night of the title versus career Hell in a Cell match between Triple H and Cactus Jack in No Way Out. We hear from Derek Smalls, who is very, and I do mean very, upset over the finish of that match, which saw Foley lose again to Triple H, back-to-back months, and he was forced to retire until he unretired a few weeks later, just in time for WrestleMania, with a crappy haircut that he got, thinking that he really was retired. Mick Foley had every intention of being retired, so he got a haircut. His hair was cut short, it was curly, and then they called him on the phone and said, "We want you back for WrestleMania." This post should come with a TVMA label. I'm warning you right now. If you are allergic to F-bombs, you're not going to like Derek's post. He says, "I'm absolutely disgusted. That was the most disgusting pile of dog shit that I have ever seen spewed on my television set. The classy thing to do, no, the fucking right thing to do, would have been to have Foley win the belt, headline WrestleMania, and retire on top. Foley has given more to wrestling than anyone, and this bullshit is absolutely disgraceful. I don't care what kind of fucked up rationale is behind this, but it's just fucking wrong. All I can say is that Vince had better be fucking back on Raw tomorrow night or order a fucking rematch tomorrow or at WrestleMania and spare us the abomination of a Triple H versus Big Show main event. I marked out like a son of a bitch when I heard no chance in hell startup only to be force-fed that bullshit pig fucker, Shane McMahon. I'm really pissed off right now, and I'm going to go log off and kick the shit out of Triple H with Cactus Jack on my WrestleMania 2K for about 3 hours in a hardcore pin-only match. I'm unbelievably pissed and disgusted by this pay-per-view. What could have been the best pay-per-view in a year? Turns out to be the biggest fucking dog turd I have ever seen. Let's run down the list of atrocities committed tonight. Kurt fucking Angle is the European champion and the Intercontinental champion, and I thought China was bad. The Dudleys are the tag team champions. I knew I would be worried after that because I have never seen a pay-per-view where every title changes hands. Although I'm more pissed about the fact that I really don't want anyone, or I did not want anyone, to win that match, he says. Who did the Dudleys face on that show anyway to win the belt? Was it the Outlaws? I think it was the New Age Outlaws. Mark Henry and Viscera put on a 6-minute suck fest. At least I didn't have to look at Mae Young's saggy tits again. And that didn't even deserve to be on WWF Metal or Jacked. The Hardys jobbed to Edge and Christian and were forced into what will undoubtedly be an insufferable angle prominently featuring Terry. I'm not even going to dignify that disgrace that featured the Big Boss Man and Taz. X-Pac, that natty little fuck, gets a win over Kane, which means this god-awful feud will stretch on even longer. Rikishi stuffs Benoit's face between his ass cheeks. I just hope Benoit got a big fat fucking bonus for that shit. The Big Slow gets a one-way ticket to WrestleMania's main event via Shane McMahon in what must have been one of the sloppiest matches and convoluted finishes that I have ever seen. And in the biggest disgrace of all, Mick Foley takes the dive and puts over Triple H again. That was fucking wrong. Nobody has given of himself to pro wrestling the way that Mick Foley has, and to book an ending like that, as well as classlessly trying to recreate, albeit badly, Mick's fall through the cage in 1998 is just fucking bullshit. I will admit that in most of the matches there was some good action, probably all around the best work pay-per-view in years. But we get to, and by the way, from reading the description I just gave you of what he thought of most of the matches, I don't see how you can come away from that thinking that this person thought it was one of the best pay-per-views in years, so that's a little odd, but anyway, he says, but we get delivered a bunch of shitty endings and a total lack of respect towards Mick Foley. I feel like I'm 5 years old again and just watched my favorite wrestler get cheated. My heart literally sank. I don't think he understands the meaning of that word. My heart literally sank as I saw Mick do the job. I could almost hear my heart splash into my stomach. I know these rants are irrational, and I'll say that I was an idiot for posting this tomorrow morning, but I am pissed. Mick should not have to go out like that. Vince had better return tomorrow and rectify this shit, because if not, we'll have the shittiest WrestleMania main event since Sid against The Undertaker. Mick deserves to headline WrestleMania more than anyone else in wrestling. To deny him the right to go out on top after all that he has given is fucking wrong, and there is no excuse for it. Signed, Derek Smalls, a severely pissed off Mick Foley superfan. Derek must have been a very happy man just a few weeks later. Mick Foley did get his WrestleMania main event. although he probably wishes he didn't after he missed that cactus elbow onto the announce desk. Came up just a little bit short on that diving elbow. Love Bun and Marla responded to Derek, "You have horrible fucking language and you are getting reported to your ISP. Are you 38 years old and still live with your mom in the same room you grew up in with the same Masters of the Universe posters on your wall? In the same bed with your Transformer bed sheets and your Max Headroom nightlight sleeping next to your trusty nightbite? Well, get your lazy punk ass up and get yourself a fucking job, you pitiful loser." Evil Big Josh says, "If you're such a super fan of Mick Foley, you would know that he's been wanting to retire for months, you idiot. You selfish, greedy, bloodlusting WWF fan. You'd rather see Foley kill himself one more time for you at WrestleMania 2000 than live a happy retirement with his wife and kids. You make me vomit from your selfishness and your sheer markdom." And Dojo818 says, "Winning the belt and retiring as champion would be the stupidest business move in the world. Mick Foley has given his all, and I know Mick would not want, or would not have wanted it to end like that. This is a business. No one retires with the belt. No individual wrestler is above this business, no matter how great they are. Mick would not have wanted to go out any other way. Pass the torch to the best heel in the industry today. That is a man of respect. If Mick would have wanted to win the belt at WrestleMania and retire with it, he would lose a lot of respect from true wrestling fans and other wrestlers. And Mick did not want that. He passed the torch tonight, and there wasn't any other way to go out in such classy fashion." March 2nd, 2000. The Wave Man was back again. This time with a post titled, "Rikishi is a future WWF World Champ without question." Says, "If anyone was a can't miss, it's him. He's over, he moves damn good in the ring for a big guy, he can sell, and as he just proved, he's not awful in the promo department either. And one thing that I loved was on Raw, he was thrown into the ropes and had a hard time running because of his, quote, ankle injury. You never ever see that. Ric Flair or whoever can break a guy's leg down all they want to, but if the person is thrown into the ropes, they're just fine. But Rikishi was limping and had a hard time doing it. That showed me a lot." And the first reply here says, "Samoan SWAT team, need I say more? Rikishi is in the middle of his 15 minutes, according to my watch. They run out around June." The Flying Fuck is a bit more optimistic. "Rikishi is certainly a future WWF champion. I truly believe that. The only thing that could hinder him would be injuries. Big men like him have a lot of trouble with their legs, historically." And finally, March 28th, 2000. Shooting Star Press 450 comes to us with a post titled, "The build-up to this year's WrestleMania main event sucks. The way they're booking this main event makes it seem like the real main event is Vince versus Stephanie versus Shane versus Linda. The four wrestlers in the main event have been put on the back burner when they should be at the head of the storylines. Why haven't they built on Triple H ending Mick Foley's career? Or brought up the fact that The Rock had big-time feuds with both Foley and Triple H? Or built on Big Show's jealousy over The Rock? Why is Shane with Big Show, Vince with Rock, and Linda with Mick anyway? Why is Shane..." Actually, I just said that. "This has to be the worst build-up to a WrestleMania ever. At least poorly built main events like Austin Rock, Taker Sid, and Brett Yoko focused on the main players instead of the people behind the main players." Hold on a second. Back up a little bit here. Was that a common opinion back then that the first Austin Rock WrestleMania match, WrestleMania 15... had a poor build? I don't remember it that way. That's the first I'm hearing of this. I mean, it had the beer truck segment, for God's sake. For that alone, how can you say the build to that WrestleMania match was poor? I don't quite understand that. Andy Atkinson responds, "Well, let's look at how it all started. Royal Rumble, The Rock wins. Predictable. Have the number one face against the number one heel champion. But then they went with the story of Big Show actually winning, which in fact he probably did. No Way Out, Big Show gets the shot at the number one contender. Shane comes back to help Big Show win. Triple H ends Foley's career. Triple H against Show at WrestleMania, with Stephanie and Shane forming a, quote, union to keep The Rock out of the title picture. Ever since, Rock has been desperate to be number one, going so far as to put his career on the line. The kids think that they have it done until Daddy shows up to regain control by helping Rock win back the number one title shot. Family feud begins, Daddy against Kid. Shane states that Show didn't lose the title shot, therefore it's a three-way. Now it's Daddy against Kid. Daddy goes on the ultimate trip and books the main event for WrestleMania at Raw. Stephanie and Triple H come out on top. This time, Mom is upset and introduces an appearance by Foley for a four-way. Sounds good, until daughter confronts Mom and it becomes dad against son against daughter against mother. A major clusterfuck. The emphasis shifted to the family, and you are correct. It sucks big time. They need to end it now. Keep Linda off TV forever. Make Vince the figurehead leader, not the matchmaker. Make Shane apologize and work for Daddy in the office. And Stephanie, have China take her out and reclaim her man. Actually, I don't think they can resolve this clusterfuck. In my opinion, it's about the only thing wrong with the WWF at the moment. That plus China. And the non-push of D'Lo. And China. Oh, and don't forget China. This has been your weekly reminder that Rikishi is certainly a future WWF champion. You just got to give it time. Let's take a few mailbag questions. If you have questions to send in, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the place to send to. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Depending on how things play out in these next few weeks, I may have to be answering more mailbag questions here on these shows, so feel free to send them in. Scott, from Kenosha, Wisconsin, could the coronavirus actually help pro wrestling? With all of the havoc that the virus has caused in the sports world and all the programs that the networks will now need to replace for the next 4 to 6 weeks, do the networks see wrestling in a different light now? WWE has the Performance Center and have shown that they can put on shows for TV even if it has to be in an empty arena. And Tony Khan does own a stadium as well and could in theory run empty arena shows for his weekly Dynamite shows. Since wrestling has no offseason, has its value gone up? It's only a matter of time, I think, before those shows get shut down too. And if that happens, nobody is going to be thinking about pro wrestling. Nobody's thinking about pro wrestling now. I mean, I'm sure Fox was pleased that SmackDown numbers went up this week, but nobody is thinking about pro wrestling. People thinking that this is all going to blow over in 4 to 6 weeks. I wish I shared your optimism, but I think this is going to be a months-long ordeal. You know, networks, they already know that pro wrestling is year-round. It's not seasonal. That's not new. That's not new knowledge. So I don't really think it's going to do much to change the value of pro wrestling. The only way it would change the value of pro wrestling is if wrestling promotions like WWE and AEW were able to just, for the foreseeable future, were the only product that would be able to continue to run, you know, first run shows, and I'm not convinced they're going to be able to do that for much longer. So in the end, I don't think it really changes the value of wrestling at all. The virus is not going to help pro wrestling, quite the opposite. If this doesn't get resolved soon, it's going to kill pro wrestling in a lot of parts of the country and in a lot of parts of the world. This is going to hurt a lot of people. And a lot of wrestlers, especially independent wrestlers, who can't draw a paycheck if they don't work. Playman from Ruz, Bulgaria. Been listening to the podcast, he says, since episode 54. Concerning European travel bans is the subject. To show you how rapidly things are changing, he sent me this email on Friday, and it's already partially outdated. He said, I just wanted to clear some things up about the European, quote-unquote, European travel ban. The ban is neither the continent of Europe nor the European Union. It is actually all of the countries from the Schengen Agreement. It is basically a European treaty that removes all borders between countries, i.e., going from France to Belgium to Germany is no different than walking to the neighboring town. One of the Schengen members is Italy, which is the hardest hit by the virus, and without borders, it is almost impossible to control who comes from there and who doesn't. This is probably the reason for the decision. The UK was never part of this agreement, so the media is correct in saying that the travel ban does not apply to them. Now, of course, since then, the UK has been added to the travel ban, as has Ireland. And actually, I saw just about an hour or two ago, it is now in the UK, they are now restricting all travel from the US. So it goes both ways now. However, what they don't say is that the restriction also doesn't apply to other countries that include EU members, such as Croatia, Cyprus, Romania, and Bulgaria. Now, I doubt there would be enough Bulgarians to compensate for the loss of German, French, and other fans at WrestleMania, assuming it doesn't get canceled. But a small patriotic surge could do wonders. All WWE needs is to have Rusev return and squash Goldberg in 30 seconds for the championship. Well, I wouldn't hold my breath on that, Playman, but you could certainly... It's good to dream. It's good to dream, but I would not hold my breath on that. And David, in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, had WCW won the Monday Night War, would you have gladly switched over and watched their product and stayed a wrestling fan, or would you have done what many older fans did and stopped watching entirely? You know, it really depends. If WCW was anything like it was during that 96 to 98 period, I probably would have kept up with it, but it deteriorated so quickly and so rapidly after that. You know, if a lot of the WWF stars would have migrated over to WCW, I probably would have stuck with it. But, you know, I grew up a WWF fan in the Northeast. I was not a WCW fan. I did watch just to pay attention to what was going on. I knew who all the big stars were and all the key storylines. But I wasn't watching all the shows from start to finish like I would watch, you know, WWE. And I wasn't as enthusiastic about it as I was, you know, about WWE at the time. But I would flip, you know, between the shows on Monday nights and watch WCW Saturday night occasionally when I was at my grandparents' house because they had cable and we didn't. This was in the early 90s. You know, I didn't get cable, you know, in our home until 95. So all the stuff that I would watch was recorded or I had to be at somebody else's house to watch it. But it wasn't until September of 95 that we finally got, you know, a cable box. So I can't say that I would have been as big of a fan as I used to be. I would have given it a chance, but yeah, I probably would have given up on it after a while. Probably. You know, when I started going to Ring of Honor shows in the mid-2000s, that really opened up my eyes to all of these other promotions. And then years later, I started to get into New Japan, and I really liked it. Impact. I watched Impact for a while. You guys know I reviewed it on the podcast for years. You know, Lucha Underground? Lucha Underground was a favorite of mine. Now I watch NWA Power every week. But 20 years ago, you take away WWE, and I don't know how much longer I would have kept up with it. Keep sending in your questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I want to hear from all of you, even if I don't have a chance to use it here on the show. I do read everything that you send over to me. Follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. If you are not subscribed on the YouTube channel, we are very close to 56,000 fans. I'm happy that the channel continues to grow. I feel like it wasn't that long ago here on this show that I was talking about hitting our 50,000 milestone, and here we are now about to hit 56K. I want to get that up to 60. I can only do that with your help, so please hit the sub button on the channel if you have not already done so. That way, when I go live, you guys get an email. You get a notification saying, hey, Solemonster's live. In fact, if I start to go live on YouTube just for random Q&As, which is something I've been thinking about doing, especially if I have a lot of downtime here at home with everything going on, it may be a totally unannounced live stream. The only way for you to know would be either you're following me on Twitter or if you're subbed to the channel. So please subscribe if you have not already done so. I am planning on going live Wednesday night after AEW Dynamite from Daly's Place. That is the current plan, to go live at 10 p.m. after Dynamite goes off the air, and we'll talk about the show and anything else that's going on. I'm sure there's going to be a whole ton of news. So that would be on Wednesday, and then back here next Sunday for episode 644 of the Solemonster Sounds Off. Life goes on. The podcast continues. The sound off rolls on, as Michael Cole would say. I will be here continuing to do shows for all of you. As long as you promise to come back and support, I will be here every single week. And I appreciate all of that support. I will be back on Wednesday. Until then, I say it every week. Be well, stay safe, be smart, and I will see you back here for 644 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Hello.
This is Morrison versus Adam Cole, Morrison versus Finn Balor, Morrison versus Tommaso Ciampa, Morrison versus Keith.
Let me ask you a question. Were you drinking during the pay-per-view tonight?
I would.
Okay, I thought so. See, I thought so. Okay.
The Sala Monster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for sound off extras and more. And follow the Sala Monster on Twitter @SalaMonster.
Sala Monster.
Sala Monster.
Put that cigarette out.
Sala Monster sounds off.